is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He has dropped it. It is Lorenzo Alexander. Oh, baby, what a hit. Fire to the far sideline. It is picked off. It is intercepted. It is picked off. Stephon Gilmore.
He will come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins, touchdown, Buffalo! McCoy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive. This is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Hello, welcome to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We are live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy alongside Donald Jones here for the next 3 hours to talk about Bills football and the NFL with you. And the phone lines open, as usual, 803-0550 or toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-552-550. Or you can join us on Twitter via Twitter at John Murphy Show. It appears the Bills might be getting closer anyway, closer to hiring the head coach, and we're here to talk about that with you today and get your thoughts on that. Reports today, unconfirmed by the folks around the corner here at One Bills Drive, unconfirmed reports that the Bills are conducting a second interview with Sean McDermott, the defensive coordinator for the Carolina Panthers the last several years. Sean McDermott, who grew up in the Philadelphia Eagles organization, about a dozen years with the Eagles, the last 5 or 6 years with the Carolina Panthers, and now getting, reportedly, a second interview with the Buffalo Bills, with the Bills Brain Trust down in Florida. What do you think about that? Give us a call. Let us know. 803-0550. Toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-552-550. Donna, what do you think about that?
I think as we talked about it, at this point for me, I just wanted to be the right guy. You know, the name, all of that stuff doesn't matter. Just hire the right guy that has the right mentality to come in here and change this franchise and get it turned in the right direction. This guy, you know, he's grown up in Philly. He has a lot of years in Philly. I think if you can coach in Philly, you can coach anywhere if you can deal with that fan base and the media there. He's been to the Super Bowl. He's coached in the Super Bowl and had a great defense that help them get to the Super Bowl. So, I mean, I hope he's the right guy. If he's going to be the guy, I hope he's the right guy.
Well, sure, yeah. We all hope he's the right guy. We don't know. And, you know, not a household name. I dare say that 95% of Bills fans, if you mentioned Sean McDermott's name to them 2 weeks ago, 95% would say, who?
Right.
Who is that? Right? He hasn't been on he's interviewed a year ago with a couple of teams, but, you know, Cleveland and Tampa Bay, I believe. But he hasn't been on anybody's real radar. So he comes in as an unknown quantity, a guy who's never been a head coach in the NFL or at any other level. And you know, those are issues that you wonder about. But there's also a lot of good. The fact that Carolina Panthers defense under Sean McDermott, the first 4 years he was there as coordinator, they were a top 10 defense in the NFL. And obviously he was part of the coaching staff that took him to the Super Bowl a year ago. Mm-hmm. He did a good job with the Philadelphia Eagles. He had kind of a fall off in his last year as with the Eagles in 2011, but grew up in that Eagles system under Jim Johnson, the longtime defensive coordinator and kind of a defensive innovator in the league for a long time. And he also, Sean McDermott, worked under Andy Reid, who has a lot of respect around the league as a coach who knows how to put together a winning program. So right. Pluses and minuses, we're just getting to know him. I know, Donald, you and I spent much of the morning kind of digging deeper into his background to figure out who this guy is. As the reports are, he's getting his second interview today in Florida with presumably the Pegulas and with Doug Whaley, the guy from the Bills, the general manager who's leading the coaching search. And we want to hear from you. What do you think about that? 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550, or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show.
I'll say this, though. The defense was a huge issue for this team this last year. We've talked about it a lot over the last couple of weeks. If this defense was a lot better, this team would probably be in the playoffs. We had a lot of people who said we need to switch back to a 4-3, and this guy is a 4-3. You know, he has a 4-3 scheme. So if that's something to excite people, maybe that's what excites people. If he's going to be the guy, he's probably going to switch it back to a 4-3. People feel like we have the tools to get it done in a 4-3, but, you know, we'll see if that's going to happen.
Well, yeah, and it also brings into question, you know, who benefits if Sean McDermott becomes the head coach here in terms of on that defensive side of the ball. Are there players who are better suited to a 4-3 scheme than the last couple of years under Rex Ryan and his primarily 3-4? Mm-hmm. Or even, you know, before him, the Bills have been a 3-4 type of scheme, mm-hmm. Going back to Patton a couple of years ago. But who benefits? I think there are a couple of candidates for that. At any rate, lines are open. We'd like to hear from you. What do you think of the reports that Sean McDermott is getting his second interview today? Unconfirmed reports here at One Bills Drive, but it appears the reports are so widespread that it probably is taking place down in South Florida. Give us a call. Lines are open, 803-0550, the number. Outside Buffalo, toll-free call, 1-888-550-2550. We're going to talk more about Sean McDermott coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. Joe Person, who covers the Carolina Panthers, for the Charlotte Observer, is going to join us at 1 to give us some of his background on Sean McDermott, what type of a coach he is, what type of a guy he is. And we're going to turn our eyes west coming up in the 2 o'clock hour and the future of the San Diego Chargers. There's a decision coming up in the next couple of days. They pushed the deadline back to Tuesday for the Chargers to decide whether to accept the offer and move to Los Angeles. It's a very real possibility. We'll talk with Marty Caswell, who covers the Chargers for Sports Radio 1090 in San Diego. That's coming up in the 2 o'clock hour. So a lot to discuss today, including the Bills reportedly digging in and doing extra work with Sean McDermott as far as a potential head coach for the Buffalo Bills. There's also the playoff picture coming up this weekend, the divisional round is what they call it, playoffs. And we want to know from you, which of those games are you most looking forward to this weekend? That is the topic of our Twitter poll. You can go to our Twitter site, at John Murphy Show, and let us know which divisional playoff game this weekend are you most looking forward to. 57%, we got about 430 votes in so far. 57% say it's the Packers and Cowboys, the one at the top of your list. That is the 440 game on Sunday. 25% say the Steelers and Chiefs. That's the other Sunday game at 1 o'clock. 15% say the Seahawks and the Falcons. That's the earlier Saturday game, 4:30 in the afternoon. And 3% say Houston at New England. That's the Saturday night game. I would put on my list Steelers and Chiefs just because I feel like I have a better handle on AFC teams. But certainly Packers and Cowboys is a pretty compelling matchup as well. Donna, what about you?
My top two in that one would be just the two NFC matchups, the Packers-Cowboys and the Seattle-Atlanta game. I mean, those games really intrigue me. I think those offenses and defenses are good. I think they're both good matchups. You know, Atlanta's offense is a great offense versus that Legion of Boom. And what do they still have left? They haven't been the same Legion of Boom. Their top safety is not playing in this game and done for the year, I believe. And so, you know, how does that matchup look with that defense going against that offense? And then the Packers-Cowboys is always going to be an intriguing game. Aaron Rodgers going up against the Cowboys is down in Dallas. For me, the Dallas Cowboys have a good defense, but I think Aaron Rodgers is going to have a great game. But I don't trust Green Bay's defense. I really don't trust their defense going up against, and I don't care if they're two rookies playing. I think that offensive line is the reason why those two rookies will be able to have a good game, just because, you know, Dak doesn't get any pressure and they open up crazy holes for Ezekiel Elliott. So I think those two games are intriguing matchups. Now, the Kansas City-Pittsburgh game is going to be a great game. I was talking to Arthur Motz about that yesterday, and we'll have him on the show Friday to talk about it. We were talking about that environment in Pittsburgh and what it was like for him playing in that first round of the playoffs, and he just was like, man, it was crazy. He said, we expect this week coming up to be crazy because it gets loud in Kansas City. That stadium gets really loud. So he's like, we're expecting it to be very wild in that stadium as well. So that's going to be an intriguing matchup. The other one, the Patriots, I really care less to see that game. Yeah.
When you talked to Arthur Motz, did the JMU Youngstown State game come up at all?
That came up. That definitely came up.
You lost your bet?
I lost a bet. You know, I had to donate $200 to the Ronald McDonald charity.
Okay.
Yeah, the Ronald McDonald House. Yeah. So he sent me the website and everything. He's like, yeah, go ahead and just donate it on there.
And he will probably check up and make sure you do.
Oh, yeah. He's
going to follow up. Hey, let's talk about it. The playoff games this weekend, the Bills' reported second interview with a head coaching candidate. All of that fair game today. The phone line's open, 803-0550 or toll free 1-888-550-2550. A tweet here from Bob Timchak who says, Murph, I'm still not sure the Cowboys are for real. I think the clock might strike midnight for them. I do too. I kind of feel that way.
A lot
leaning on those two rookies, Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott. Never played in a game quite like this before, and I'm really curious to see how that game plays out. I really am.
I think the the pressure is really on that offensive line to come through. You know, they have to make sure that they open holes. And I feel like they've been doing that all year. Like, if you watch Cowboys games, Dak Prescott has no pressure on him. And Ezekiel Elliott has holes to run through. It's like running through – I don't even know what it's like running through. You know, he doesn't get touched until he gets into the defensive secondary. And so I don't – the Packers' defense is not a good defense, especially in the secondary. So if you have healthy Cowboys receivers, I just don't trust that. Now, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, they're a team that a lot of people think – I mean, when they get into the playoffs, they're scared to play. I mean, people are scared to play them. But I just don't know if they have enough to get it done down in Dallas.
All right, we're going to find out. Let's talk about those games. That's our Twitter poll. Let's talk about the reports of a Buffalo Bills possible head coaching candidate, a second interview for Sean McDermott. Phone lines open, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We'll start with Mike in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. Hello, Mike. How are you?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
My question is if we hire a guy like Sean McDermott, which I really think he could possibly be a good head coach. If we switch to the 4-3, what's that going to mean for defense players like Reggie Ragland and the guys that Rex brought in to fit his scheme the past 2 years?
Real good question. Ragland, it would appear Donald would be better suited to a inside linebacker spot. And, you know, Preston Brown, obviously, is better suited on the interior as well. So, I don't know, maybe Preston would be an outside guy.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
You think? I think they would probably move. They'd probably kick Preston outside and let Ragland play in the middle. But those are good questions.
I mean, Reggie, when you're playing outside linebacker in a 4-3, you're counted on to drop out in the coverage and everything. You know, so I don't know if they put a rookie in coverage. Now, I don't know, you know, who's the more athletic of those two guys. And you can tell me because you were here in the spring.
I think Preston.
And he has more experience covering guys. Even though he's played in the middle this year, you know, he has had to cover some tight ends and receivers, so I would think that they would kick him outside, put Reggie in the middle, and then you have to have another guy on the other side of him to be able to cover as well. But the middle linebacker role is tough on a rookie. He's going to be a rookie again. You know, this is going to be his rookie season, and it's tough to play that as a rookie. You have to call defenses and everything. So we'll see how that plays
out. Yeah, I mean, a lot of it, and the caller Mike from Williamsport just hit on a pretty good topic, and we're assuming here that, first of all, that they're going to play a 4-3. Mm-hmm. Where it's a bit of an assumption, too, that Sean McDermott is going to be the guy. But if that all takes place, there are a lot of guys in the front seven who might see their roles change, even in the defensive interior, defensive line, mm-hmm. you know, where they've kind of asked Marcel Darius to be a nose in the season and a half that he played over the last 2 years, and maybe he doesn't play exactly that role. I think he and Kyle Williams are well suited to play the interior defensive line spots. But then there are other guys,
Everybody
you
else.
Know,
like outside, Jerry and
yeah, Jerry Hughes. Yeah. Is he a true 4-3 defensive end? I don't know, or is he an outside linebacker?
I don't know. I think he's more of an outside linebacker type in a 4-3. A true 4-3 defensive end is just a lot bigger than Jerry is. That's not saying that he can't get it done. He can rush the passer. I think he could be a guy who could play both, you know. But can Jerry now drop out in the coverage? That's the biggest question. I mean, he's been the guy who's this defense has looked to rush a lot over the past few years. And now if you put him at linebacker in the 4-3, can you drop him out in the coverage? I mean, can he play that game?
I don't know. That would be an interesting transition. A lot of, you know, think of – and there's a progression to a transition. When any new coach comes in, Sean McDermott or anybody else, and the first thing would be, who's your staff? Who's your coordinators? I mean, that mm-hmm. would be a pretty significant question. You would think if it's a guy like McDermott coming from the defensive side of the ball, he would most likely have his idea of what he wanted his defensive staff to look like and probably people that he's worked with in the past. So you would think that many of the defensive coaches still on staff here might not be retained. Mm-hmm. On the offensive side of the ball, I don't know. I mean, who does McDermott work with? Who he has been linked in some quarters to Mike McCoy, the former San Diego Chargers head coach, a very highly regarded offensive mind. And I think that would be a win for the Bills if McDermott comes and brings Mike McCoy with him. But a lot of these questions, I'm sure these are the questions that are going on right now down in Florida. All right, what's your staff look like? What are your plans for the defense? I mean, this, if as reported, the second interview with Sean McDermott, you would think they're down to the nitty-gritty details of mm-hmm. what's the staff's going to look like, what's the scheme going to look like, what do you need? I mean, it probably is is down to the fine strokes here of, as far as what the future of the franchise in terms of the football department would look like.
Now, Mike McCoy, what type of offense is he
I'm not sure. I mean, they've had success, obviously, with Phillip Rivers. I don't think it's – I think it's kind of a hybrid. I don't think it's – I don't think you could refer to it as a West Coast style. I think it's even more sophisticated than that, you know. Pretty productive offense over the years.
I mean, it has been a productive offense. I don't know anything really about Mike McCoy and his offense. I mean, you see Phillip Rivers out there throwing the ball all around.
Yeah.
But I've never really paid attention to what type of offense they run out there. I just know Phillip Rivers is a guy who throws the ball all around.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, he would have to keep some of that, that you have to be able to rush the ball still. You can't just come in here and say we're going to throw it all around and when you have the number one rushing team in the league. Now, once again, if Sean McDermott is going to be the coach, he's going to want to know who's his quarterback. You know, that's a big question
right.
for him. And that's something that I'm sure they're talking about right now down in Florida as well.
Yeah.
You know, who's going to be the quarterback? What's the future for quarterback? Should we be trying to draft one? Like, what's the deal with that? I mean, there's a lot of questions that have to be answered between him and ownership, and there are a lot of holes that have to be filled. There are a lot of things that need to be done between now and, you know, free agency and the draft, you know. So the stuff has to really start to fall into place now, starting with the head coach, the staff, and the quarterback.
We'll see how it plays out. No confirmation from the Buffalo Bills on what's going on, but several reports out there that Sean McDermott is in South Florida for his second interview with the Bills Brain Trust, including one would think the Pegulas and general manager Doug Whaley, who has led this coaching search. They first met late last week. I want to say, what, Wednesday or Thursday last week? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was Wednesday last week. So a week ago, their first meeting, the Bills went on to interview three others since then, including Harold Goodwin from the Arizona Cardinals, including Chris Richard from Seattle, and including, of course, Anthony Lynn. Yeah, it was a week ago, right? Last Wednesday when they interviewed Sean McDermott. And the reports now that McDermott is in for a second interview. He's been around the league for a while, 16 years. He had a top 10 defense in the league for his first four seasons as coordinator in Carolina, or at least his last four up until this past year. A lot of time with the Eagles, defensive backfield coach, linebacker coach. Started out with the Eagles in the scouting department, which is interesting. You know, he went to the Eagles as a scout and kind of, you know, learned the NFL that way when he went to the Philadelphia Eagles. He played college football at William & Mary. He was a all-conference defensive back safety at William & Mary. I reached out to my buddy Mark Kelso, who also played a little defensive back at William & Mary. And Kelso's response was funny. He said he doesn't know Sean McDermott, but he said, this is Kelso's quote, he must be smart, organized, and competitive if he's a former William & Mary safety.
Mm-hmm.
Kelso with a little pat on his own back, I guess, right there.
Yeah, definitely. Kelso, those guys really stick up for each other because Kelso said the same thing about Mike Tomlin.
Yep.
You know,
they do stick up for each other.
They do.
Here's a call from Nick in Hamburg. Hello, Nick. Go ahead. You're on the air.
How you doing? First off, I'd like to say thanks for the opportunity and for always having a great talk show.
Thank you.
My observation, or however, is, okay, you get a new coach. Why don't they just come in, evaluate all the talent they have, and then say, okay, we got best guys that'll play 4-3 or 3-4. These are the quarterbacks we got, rather than trying to, you know, clean out the whole place and flip the house every other year. It's just, as a longtime fan, even when they're not doing well, it's hard to watch. Flip them every 2 years, it's tough. It's just, I just wondered, and I'll shut up and listen to the radio rather than the phone, but I appreciate the thought. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mark. Thanks for your comments. You make a very strong point, to be honest with you. It's something that, you know, we kind of lament here at One Bills Drive, many of us who work here, the every other year process of trying to identify and hire a head coach. And when people, you know, scratch their head and express wonderment, how can a team go 17 years without making the playoffs? You know how? When you change coaches every couple of years.
Right.
When you make the kind of switch that you allude to there, Mark, that all of these players accumulated under the previous regime, do they have to be sent packing now? Do they have to find a different job because there's a new coach coming in, a new defensive system potentially coming in? Many of them will be, and that sets you back. No matter how you try to slice it, that sets you back. And Not that the Bills necessarily want to take a step back or have to take a step back, but if you ask me, the number one reason why the Bills have missed the playoffs for 17 years, it's the constant turnover in coaching. Now, a couple of them quit. Mularkey and what's his name? Marone walked away from the job. But still, when you have that sort of instability in the coaching ranks, you wind up with spinning your wheels, quite frankly. And that's what the Bills have done, and that's why, to my mind, there's no curse. There's no dysfunction. There's no ineptitude that keeps them out of the playoffs. It's the constant churn of coaches, I think.
Yeah, first of all, Marone, I'm still stunned about this whole job down in Jacksonville thing with Marone. Just the fact that he's even getting interviewed for jobs, to me, is amazing. When you walk away from something like that, it's the same as, you know, how everybody looks at players deciding not to play in the bowl game. You just decided to walk away from the team like you weren't fired. I mean, that's just amazing to me. They had to ask him, like, why'd you just walk away from that?
Yeah.
When they interviewed him.
I would hope so, yeah.
But anyway, when a new coach comes in, he does evaluate the players that are on the roster, and there are going to be some players that he says, I want back on this team. We got to bring this guy back on this team, especially if they're free agents. But for the most part, they want to bring their guys in, you know, and that's why you can't have turnover so much, because every coach wants to bring in his type of guy, his style of guy. And it's not just the scheme. He has to have the right guy he feels fits that scheme. You know, if this guy wants to run a 4-3, well, I feel like, you know, the corners need to be 6 feet or taller for me to run this scheme. I feel like the outside linebackers need to be this size. I feel like this guy needs to be able to do this. And it takes them a couple of years to bring in all the type of guys that they want to fit their scheme. And so that's why we keep talking about continuity. You got to have some continuity. You can't just keep turning over, turning over, turning over. He will evaluate the guys on the roster, but if he's a 4-3 guy, he's going to run a 4-3. You know, it's just, I mean, most coaches will not say, okay, I'm going to run a 3-4 just because that's the style. That's the guys that are on the roster right now. That's what they run. That's just not how it operates. They're going to run a 4-3, and it might take him some years to get the guys he wants on this team to run his style of defense.
Here's a call from Mark. Go ahead, Mark. You're on the air with us. Hi.
Hey, Murph, Donald. Thanks for having me on, guys. Love the show.
Sure.
I got 2 points. One, I love the McCoy move. I mean, he made something out of nothing with Tim Tebow, even though I'm a Tim Tebow fan, which was good. I mean, he had to constantly make the offense work around him, and they made the playoffs. And then, you can't go wrong with being Peyton Manning's offensive coordinator. But I think it'd be fair for McDermott to look at Whaley and the Pagulas and say, Doug, that press conference, that was brutal. I mean, it was bold, but who's my boss? Who's going to, who's making the decisions? I want some clarity on the communication of the franchise. I don't got a lot of time. I'm going to hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. Yeah, it's a fair question for Sean McDermott or anybody interviewing for the job. But,
yeah,
you know, as Whaley said in that infamous press conference now 9 days ago, those details, who reports to who, are I don't know if they're negotiable, but it's not settled yet. I mean, I don't have the transcript in front of me, but Doug Whaley said at that press conference, we'll see. We haven't decided who reports to who. Is it like the similar organization, which many teams have, where the coach reports directly to the owner and the owner has ultimate hiring and firing responsibility? Or does that scenario change? I think, as Doug Whaley said 9 days ago, all of that is up for debate. One ESPN report says, as far as McDermott talking to the Buffalo Bills, says that McDermott, this is the quote from ESPN, McDermott is not seeking control as much as he is seeking specifics about who's responsible for what and how they'll all work together, according to sources. That's fair. He should. He should ask those questions, not because of the press conference, but because those are the normal questions that right. one would ask. You know, who do I report to? What's the setup like? What are my requirements? Do we have a standing telephone conference call on Monday or Tuesday with the owner and the GM, as many teams do, as the Bills have done apparently they did it under Ralph Wilson. The owner had a standing Tuesday morning news conference or Tuesday morning telephone call with the coach every Tuesday. So all those things are fair game for Sean McDermott or any potential coach to inquire about, and I'm sure all those things are being hashed out now.
It's like any other job, you know. When you walk into somewhere, you'd like to know who your boss is going to be. Now, when you're being interviewed for a job, the person that's interviewing you might not necessarily be your boss, but you at least want to meet that person. If you take the job, you want to meet that person fairly early in being hired. It's just like buying a car or buying a house or something. Like, you need to ask all questions while you're in the interview process. Let's lay everything out on the line right now. I want to know everything about this job, just like you want to know everything about me. If I'm going to take this job, if you like me enough, allow me to be able to ask these questions. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure that's what they're doing right now, just hashing everything out. And I'm sure his main question, or one of his main questions, the first two, who do I report to and who's the quarterback?
Yeah.
You know?
And to the caller's question, Mark, the fact that those questions are being asked, and I know this will be a popular storyline, does not, in my mind, necessarily make the Bills job different than any other job in the NFL. If you're mm-hmm. going to be the next head coach of the San Diego Chargers, you ask those questions. What are the lines of authority here? If you're going to be the next head coach of any of these teams with vacancies, you ask those questions. So if the I know there was a popular storyline out there, who would take that job? It's such a mess in Buffalo. Well, the fact is, I don't believe it is, and people will disagree with that, but I don't believe it is. I think, these are good questions for whoever the coach is, maybe Sean McDermott in the next couple of days. What did you like about the Buffalo job? You know, many people thought this was a poison. Stay away. The atmosphere there is toxic. Why would you take this job if that narrative was out there? It's a good question for whoever the coach is.
I think the question will sound a little bit more like, who do you report to?
Yeah.
Just bluntly.
Fair question.
Who do you report to?
Yeah.
I expect to hear that in a press conference. Whenever that press conference comes down, whoever the coach is, that's going to be a question amongst many others. He's also going to be asked, what's your plan at quarterback? Who would you like to be the quarterback on his team? Is it Tyrod Taylor? Is it Cardale Jones? Is it somebody else? And those are all things that I'm sure they have to hash out right now before whoever is the coach gets out there and has to, answer these questions.
Yeah. Sean McDermott being reportedly interviewed a second time by the Buffalo Bills for the head coaching vacancy here. We have no confirmation of that, but we're willing to discuss it with you. The phone line's open. Is Sean McDermott in line to be the youngest head coach ever in Bills history? We'll talk about that when we come back. It is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. John Murphy, Donald Jones from One Bills Drive, where there's nothing official from the Bills, but the reports are out there that Sean McDermott is in for his second interview as a potential head coach for the Buffalo Bills. How would he stack up in terms of age? We talked the other day, Monday, Donald, about the overwhelming tilt, it would appear, towards youth when it came to the four head coaching interviews the Bills did. McDermott and Harold Goodwin and Chris Richard and Anthony Lynn. And McDermott, it turns out, is 42 years old. Who's the youngest head coach the Bills have ever had? Got to go all the way back to 1966. Joe Collier was 34 years old when he replaced Lou Saban as head coach of the Bills. Saban, when he got the job, was 41, so he also was younger than Sean McDermott. Mike Mularkey was 43. Greg Williams is 43. Kay Stevenson was 39. So at age 42, seems pretty young. He would not be the youngest head coach in Bills history. What does that matter? I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, the fact that he is that young, I think, we've talked about this. I think it really helps out with relating to the players and this generation of player and understanding how to talk to them in different ways. So understanding how to relate to them, but at the same time, understanding that I am the coach and, this is my job. I will command the room. I will command respect from this team. And we will, this is my philosophy. And if you're not going to follow my philosophy, then you won't be on this team. But at the same time, he can still relate to players because he's young. I think it's good to have a younger coach.
I think it could be. Yeah. Here's Herb in West Seneca. Hello, Herb. Welcome.
Hey, John, how you doing, Murph?
Good.
Love you and Donald on the show.
Hey, thank you, Herb. We love you.
I really don't think that age matters. The Oakland Raiders hired John Madden at the age of 32 years old. Miami Dolphins hired Don Shula at the age of 33. So my point is, knowledge, I believe, is more important, and I agree with Donald as far as being able to interact with the players. But also, who's your staff going to be? Who are you bringing in? because neither Shula or John Madden were great coaches from the start, but they became great coaches over the period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah.
You know, I've studied a lot of different CEOs, a lot of different billionaires, multi-millionaires throughout the years. And a lot of them will say the thing that really made them the most successful was the fact that they were never really the smartest person in the room. They just surrounded themselves with the smartest people, you know. So if he's not, you know, I'm sure he's a very smart guy. I'm sure he's very, whoever it is, I'm sure these guys are very smart. They're all young. But who's going to be the coaches? Now, you got to have the staff in place that really is knowledgeable and knows what they're doing, even if you're not that knowledgeable. You're a rookie head coach. If you have the right staff in place, everything will run smooth because you can still rely on those guys. Now, I'm still the head coach, and so I have the final say, but I still can take advice from everybody else because all of you guys have been doing this for so long.
Yeah. I tend to think, and I'm just kind of thinking this through, age, it doesn't matter. I mean, as the caller, Herb, pointed out, there have been some extremely successful head coaches hired at a very young age, John Madden and Don Shula. There's also been flops. You know, Josh McDaniels, very mm-hmm. young when the Denver Broncos hired him. Maybe too young for the job. Maybe Bill Belichick was too young when he got the head coaching position with the Cleveland Browns.
Yes.
So I would just throw out age. I don't think it matters. You know, the fact that Sean McDermott is 42, well, he's been around the league for a while, which I think matters more than anything. I don't even know about knowledge and smarts. Best head coach in Bills history, Marv Levy. If you sat him down and say, diagram the defense that your guys are playing,
yeah.
or tell me about the principles of the K-gun. Now, I'm not saying Marv was you know, not aware of it or didn't follow it or didn't know the basics of it, but that wasn't his strength. Marv's strength was leadership and providing direction and coordination and structure, I believe. I mean, a lot of it goes back to what Dominique Foxworth said on our show last week. Hire a CEO. Pay good coordinators. Hire coordinators to design the structure of your offense and your defense and let them go to work. But as far as the head coach, hire a leader. Hire a guy mm-hmm. with a clear vision of what he wants the program to look like. Hire a guy with great communication skills, not good, but great. Hire a great teacher and empower him to put together a staff of experts in offense, defense, and special teams.
I mean, the smartest thing you can do is to hire the right guys. That's what I mean by being smart. Like,
yeah.
Are you smart enough to hire the right guys? And are you good enough to have those guys that are probably, you know, years ahead of you, have been coaching a lot longer than you, but you can still – you know, have that respect of even those guys because you are the head coach. And that's – you got to have that combination of having the right guys, experience on your staff, but at the same time, I'm the head coach. Everything comes through me, and I lead this thing. And we're all going to work together, but I'm the leader on this thing.
803-0550, the number. We've got the report out there, several reports that Sean McDermott is in Florida for his second interview for the Bills head coaching job. Want to know what you think about that. And we can talk about the upcoming division round playoff games this weekend, of course, 803-0550, or toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Here's Mike from New Jersey. Hello, Jersey Mike.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good.
I just wanted to say if this is true, then I think we got a great guy, great next coach. I think his defense, you know, meets the eye test. The last 5 years they have improved and, you know, is known to develop players. So I think it's going to be really good hire as long as we do something on the offense. The only question that I have is regarding the power structure within the organization. If, you know, I just want to make sure that, you know, they don't have any confusion in terms of who reports to who, because I think with Rex Ryan, that's what happened. He was, you know, he was reporting to, it was said that he was reporting directly to Pavulas. But I still didn't feel like he has a direct line to them. I think he still, you know, it was like a dotted line type of thing. You know, I just wanted to make sure that there's a clear power structure in the organization. Yeah. Otherwise, well, after 2 years, if, you know, things go the wrong way, like we have a bad start in the season or something, we might end up being in the same situation again.
Mike, what do you mean by a dotted line, and how do you see that? How did that factor in anything that went down with Rex?
Yeah, so what happens is, you know, when you say that, okay, you know, a coach reports directly to the owner, right? You want to have the open communication in a sense that, you know, it, not every communication that happens between Pagulas and Rex Ryan needs to be shared with, you know, GM or vice versa. You know what I mean? And, you know, it should be like a clear, this is a pressure, right? It's like I'm almost like you're talking to your boss's boss every day. So that's what I think that creates a lot more confusion. Did it make sense? Or?
Yeah, I mean,
I guess in theory it does. I don't know if that's really what the structure was here, though. You know,
here's my thing. I could care less what the structure is as long as it's laid out on the line what it's going to be, you know, and people don't overstep the boundaries and it doesn't change. Like, this is the structure. This is how it's going to be. And that's it. If the coach has to report directly to the owners, then that's what it is. If he's reporting to Doug, then that's what it is. But yeah, just lay it out there so everybody knows and there's no confusion.
And there are models for both of those mm-hmm. all over the NFL. I don't know that anyone has a monopoly on this is the way to do it. And I also think, and this will not be a popular opinion, I don't believe, but I think the reports of the disconnect between Ryan, Whaley, and ownership are greatly exaggerated. They worked, you know, together. Did they agree on everything? No. Clearly they did not. Mm-hmm. Did they were they in lockstep on every decision? No. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find any NFL GM and coach who are there. But it wasn't – I don't think it was a contentious relationship. I don't think it was a situation where, you know, regardless of the confusing news conference 9 days ago, I don't think – I mean, there's no way Doug Whaley was dumbstruck by the notion right. that Rex Ryan had been let go, that the decision had been made to let him go. He saw what was going on. He's deeply involved in every aspect of the football organization. But as I said, many people will discount that, but that's my observation from what I saw working here.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at this whole structure thing, I guess it matters what the structure is, but at the same time, man, at the end of the day, it all comes down to putting the right players on the field, the right staff in place, and guys performing. All right, the coaching staff has to perform. They have to call the right plays, have the right players on the field. And that's all that matters, man. All of this structure and everything that we're talking about right now, that's just something that really came down because of that one press conference.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we're stuck talking about, but it really does not matter. As long as it's laid out there, if you get the right staff in place and you get the right players, we won't even be talking about this.
And as an earlier caller pointed out, is that a question that Sean McDermott might have for the owners and the GM in his second interview as reported today? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Should be a question. Who do I report to? What are the lines of authority? What are the lines of communication? What do we – I mean, even down to – I was thinking today what questions I would ask if I were – and actually this tweet that we got, Bills Fan for Life, I'd love to be a fly on the wall with Pagulas and Boca Raton. So would I. Because I was thinking this morning, what questions would I have? You know what I'd ask about? I'd ask about minute details, like how are you going to seat guys on the charter for away games? And what's your daily schedule look like? And what would your Saturday walkthrough look like?
Mm-hmm.
What's your schedule look like you know, during the off season for you and the players? I get into the nitty-gritty details. I assume that's what they're doing today. And including questions about I would include questions for either, you know, two ways, both from the coaching candidate to the owners and the owners down to the coaching candidate. Like, how are we going to structure this? Who are we going to talk to? What happens if a player's on the waiver wire that I really like? Do I have the authority to go to the GM and say, or do I have the ability to go to the GM and say, I really want this guy. You got to get this guy for me. All of those things can be worked out, should be worked out right now. And I'm pretty confident that it will be. And because I've seen it work, you know, for the last couple of years with Rex Ryan. I mean, look, you don't believe that IKM and Polly was a Rex Ryan mm-hmm. a push for the general manager. They went out and got him. Rex wanted him. It was Ligier Duzable, guys like that.
Right.
I mean,
all the coaches that he had in there. He had probably more coaches that than other teams have on their staff right now. And a lot of those coaches came directly from New York with him. You know, they were people that and you're going to get that. But he has to work with the GM and the owners to be able to bring in the people that he wants to bring in. But should we put you on the Pagula jet down to Boca?
I'll go.
So you can be in the
room. I got questions, I'm telling you. I got a list of questions. Maybe, you know, if you're listening at home, what questions would you want to know from Sean McDermott in that second interview reported today? Give us a call on that. We're going to break here and get back to more phone calls, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. That's a good point. Let's get some listeners, some Bills fans listening in. What questions would you have for Sean McDermott? And vice versa, if you're McDermott, what questions would you have for Pagulas and the general manager? We'll break. Come back with more in a moment. John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to our studios, One Buffalo Studio in the AtPro Sports Training Center, Orchard Park, where weather's okay today. Kind of a little thaw going on here in Orchard Park for those of you out of town. We salute those of you who've hung with us on MSG Network. We had power outages earlier this morning, which affected the hockey show, but we're good thanks to the hard work of our crew. We're good. We're back on the air on MSG and, of course, on our flagship radio station in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550.
The win last night was howling all night.
It was great. I kind of liked it. It was cool.
You liked it?
Yeah, I thought it was cool. Power went out at our house for about a half hour or so, but no problems. Yeah.
I had power all night.
We survived. It was good. That's good. The Bills talking with reportedly Sean McDermott, the former, still the Carolina Panthers defensive coordinator who interviewed for the job a week ago, now reportedly getting a second interview. What do you think about that? And if you were Sean McDermott, what questions would you have for Bills management? If you were Bills management, what questions would you have for Sean McDermott? Phone lines open, 803-0550. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Here's Mark in Buffalo. Go ahead, Mark. Welcome.
Hi, Doug.
Hi.
What's up, man?
Hey, one thing that I wanted to know, if we were to hire Sean McDermott, what his offensive philosophy would be, as far as is he a run-first guy? Is he because that I know those things do relate to the defense, as far as if he's going to be a guy who rushes the passer, primarily or stops the run. I know he's a 4-3 guy. So I guess my question is just if he would plan to keep Tyrod Taylor, which seems to be the most logical thing to do, or if he moves on, and if so, what his philosophy would be on offense.
Yeah, good questions that I don't have any answers for. Yeah. I don't know where they're going with Tyrod Taylor. On the list of questions that Sean McDermott might have for Bills management, that would be at or near the top. And I'm telling you, we've had a couple of calls and a couple of people offer opinions on the management structure, who reports to who. If I'm Sean McDermott, I'm putting that on the back burner, and I'm asking, first question, what are we doing at quarterback, and who am I going to work with? Is Taylor coming back? First question. I don't have the answer for that.
Now, we've talked about this, but does he have say-so in that as a coach coming in?
Well, Doug Whaley said he would have a voice in it, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that was just my question. Does he have say-so, or does Doug Whaley say no? Or Doug Whaley, the Pegulas, everybody say no? We're moving on from Tyrod Taylor, and this is what you have to work with, yeah. And we'll draft one guy.
Don't know. Is that a deal-breaker if you're Sean McDermott? I don't know. Again, we don't have answers to these questions, mm-hmm. But I'm sure that's on the front burner, or maybe it's already settled by now, but I'm sure that's probably issue one. As I said, for me, if I'm Sean McDermott, that is much more important than who do I report to and what's the, you know, the lines of authority here? What's the, you know, what are the ownership structure? What does the management structure look like? I'd want to know, what are we doing at quarterback? And what do you guys think of Taylor? And sure, weigh in. Yeah, I mean, if he's out there saying, I really want Taylor, I want to keep him around, I think we can win with him, okay, you'd have to take that under advisement. If he's saying, yeah, okay, let's move on, then, you know, do what you want to do, right?
I tell you this on offense. In my opinion, if he's smart, he'd try to bring back some of the coaches from this past year's staff on offense, you know, especially if Anthony Lynn ends up not getting a job somewhere else as a head coach. You try to bring him back as the OC. Try to bring back a Sanjay Lau. These guys that really had this offense moving in the right direction, because you need those guys here to keep the ball moving in the right direction and mm-hmm. keep, if Tyrod Taylor is going to be the guy, to keep, you know, grooming him really into a better passer. I think that's smart on his part if he becomes the head coach to bring back, you know, and I know coaches want to bring in their own guys, the guys that they're cool with, the guys that they've been friends with and coached together for years, but this is one of those things we talk about as a CEO. Sometimes you got to do what's right for the team, and I think that's something that's right for the team.
Can Anthony Lynn do that if he's interviewed for the head coaching job here and passed over for the head coaching job? Can he come back as an OC? Would you?
I mean, I probably wouldn't.
I don't think I would. He can find a job, I think, no question. I don't know if he would do that, though.
If he doesn't get a head coaching job, he's going to be an OC somewhere. I don't think I would come back. It's the same thing with Tyrod. You know, if they came and wanted to renegotiate and I'd search somewhere else, like our boy Joel said last week? And I search somewhere else and see my value is at least the same as it would be here, then I'd probably leave and go somewhere else just because I don't feel like I'm wanted here.
Yeah. Hey, we're going to talk more about Sean McDermott when we come back after the top of the hour. Joe Person covers the Carolina Panthers for the Charlotte Observer. He's going to join us live on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. We'll get his thoughts on Sean McDermott, who reportedly is discussing the Bills head coaching vacancy for a second time, a second interview in Boca Raton, Florida. We'll talk with Joe Person when we return. Of course, more of your phone calls. John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive, where the Buffalo Bills coaching search continues. Reports today unconfirmed that Sean McDermott, Carolina Panthers defensive coordinator, is getting a second interview for the Bills head coaching vacancy. That interview reportedly taking place with team ownership in Boca Raton, Florida. McDermott, 42 years of age, he coordinated a top 10 NFL defense in 4 of the last 5 years. Reports from ESPN say McDermott is not seeking control as much as he is looking for specifics about who's responsible for what and how it will all work together. There are other reports that say that former San Diego Chargers head coach Mike McCoy would be a candidate for offensive coordinator if McDermott gets the job in Buffalo. Those reports unconfirmed as well. But Sean McDermott, widely reported, interviewing for a second time as head coach of the Buffalo Bills. Around the NFL, the Dolphins defensive coordinator Vance Joseph continues to be linked with the Denver Broncos opening. He interviewed with the Broncos yesterday. John Elway said, quote, he has great leadership qualities and a strong vision of what it takes to win. NFL Network says Vance Joseph is a front runner for the head coaching job in Denver. Dallas Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott, on his way to work today, was involved in a minor two-car crash in Frisco, Texas. No injuries reported. Both parties involved in the crash went on their way. Elliott says, I'm good. I've been in bigger collisions. And the Buffalo Sabres with a 4-1 win over the Philadelphia Flyers at KeyBank Center last night. The Sabres now with wins in 3 of their last 4 points in each of those games. Sam Reinhart picked up a goal and 2 assists. He has 12 points in his last 10 games. Anders Nilsson was sensational, 39 saves in net. Sabres practicing today, then they hit the road. They play in Tampa tomorrow, and they play in Carolina on Friday. And that is the update, the sports update from One Bills Drive, where the Buffalo Bills are reportedly linked now to Sean McDermott with a second interview. We're going to talk about that with you. We're going to talk about it also with our next guest. He is the beat reporter who covers the Carolina Panthers for the Charlotte Observer. Joe Person on the line with us. Joe, thank you very much for being with us. It's John Murphy and Donald Jones, and thanks for taking a couple of minutes to be with us here today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys.
You confirmed that it is McDermott getting the second interview, which I think kind of points the Bills in that direction. Tell me what you think of that, Joe, and does McDermott impress you as a guy who's ready to be a head coach?
Yeah, he does. I mean, he, frankly, there are some of us who've covered him for the last 6 years who kind of thought this day would come maybe even a little sooner. He was in the mix for other head coaching positions the last couple of years. Last year, he met with Tampa Bay and Cleveland before those teams hired Dirk Cutter and Hugh Jackson. And I think the timing hurt McDermott last year, too, with the Panthers being, you know, going all the way out to the Super Bowl. Everyone had made their hires long before the Panthers season wrapped up. So, unfortunately, for Ron Rivera, they did not do nearly as well this year. But that helped, I think, Sean McDermott get in front of a lot of these owners, a lot of these decision makers. And so he, in addition to the Bills, he also interviewed this year with San Diego and San Francisco. The Niners interview was just yesterday, but yeah, definitely head coaching makeup in my time with him, and an impressive guy.
Now, you know, that defense, he really built a good defense out there, especially the year they went to the Super Bowl. Last year they went to the Super Bowl. A lot had to do with how good that defense was playing, but what happened this year with that defense? It was a lot different.
Yeah, that's a great question, and much to anyone on the defensive staff's consternation, the front office let Josh Norman go back in April without any kind of compensation in return when they rescinded that franchise tag. That was a huge loss, not just for the secondary, but, you know, I think it affected the whole defense. Mm-hmm. They started from scratch. They also had a couple other veteran corners they chose to let go or retire. Peanut Tillman, Cortland Finnegan, guys like that. So they start over with two rookie corners drafted in the second and third rounds, James Bradbury and Darryl Worley. And they took their lumps early in the year. It was not a good secondary. It was not a good defense. But you saw them kind of slowly evolve and get better. The two rookies by the end of the year were playing very good football, sound fundamental football. And then the pass rush, even without Luke Kuechly the last 6 weeks, who was dealing with aftermath of concussion, the pass rush ended up second to, I think, Denver overall in sacks. So, it was not up to McDermott standards, but I think a lot of that had to do with personnel.
Joe Person, our guest, he covers the Carolina Panthers for the Charlotte Observer. We're talking about the reports that Sean McDermott's getting a second interview with the Buffalo Bills today. Hey, Joe, you know, pretty extensive, at least lengthy resume in the NFL for Sean McDermott. Most of it, 12 years anyway, the first 12 years with the Philadelphia Eagles. What did he take, do you think, from working with Andy Reid and from working with Jim Johnson with the Eagles for a dozen years or more?
Yeah, that's a good question. And Sean also, I don't know if you guys know this, he is a Philly guy, grew up there, was a state champion high school wrestler there before going on to William & Mary as a walk-on. But after where incidentally he played with Mike Tomlin, but he comes back to Philly and he basically, you know, shows up at what was then Veterans Stadium, knocking on the door, gets hired by Ray Rhodes' staff in what was Ray Rhodes' final year. And he just slowly built his kind of worked his way up the ladder. I mean, he really was kind of the when Andy Reid got there, he was the kind of the office assistant to Andy. Then he got into the coaching roles, and all of this is a way of just saying that this is a kind of a self-made guy. He's not a guy who had a lot of contacts in the league. Just worked his way up the ladder. So it was there that he met Ron Rivera on Andy Reid's staff. I think from Jim Johnson, we saw the aggressiveness, but I'll tell you, he does not. When McDermott got here, we all thought he was going to be blitzing all the time the way Jim Johnson's defense did. And McDermott really prefers, he's a 4-3 guy. His ideal is to generate pass rush out of that base without doing a lot of blitzing. Play zone behind it, a lot of cover two in the secondary, and it's been an effective scheme so far.
Now, when you look at that defense and those players, it seems like they really respond to him well. So is that the sense that you get even talking to the players there?
Yeah, I do. I mean, now I can tell you that Sean is not, you know, he knows kind of when to pat guys on the back, but also, you know, when they need some tough love. I mean, he's not just going to, say anything that he thinks the players want to hear. I mean, I've seen him kind of get into it with some players. But as I said, I've also seen him go around the locker room after wins, after losses, and get with guys individually and you know, kind of have heart-to-heart type of talk. I think in Philly he had, because of what I said, about how some of those veterans, I think, in Philly initially were kind of looking at him like, who, you know, I remember this guy when he was like, you know, picking up free agents at the airport. But that wasn't the case here. I mean, like I say, he arrived here with a good reputation, a guy who'd already been a coordinator of a playoff team in Philly. And I think players do respond well to him.
Hey, Joe, what questions, if you were the Buffalo owners, the Pegulas, what questions do you think would be, you know, at the top of their list for Sean McDermott? What should they ask him about?
Well, because he's a defensive guy, obviously they're going to want to know who he's going to bring with him. I don't have a ton on that. I know Mike McCoy is a name that's been mentioned. I certainly Sean and Mike have some background. I don't think they've ever worked together. In fact, I'm certain they did not. But that would be key. You know, I think one of the something that Sean kind of had to fight early in his career was the perception that, well, you're the defensive coordinator, but Ron Rivera is running the defense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case. I mean, this is, you know, obviously Ron will poke his head into the defensive meeting room and he has a say so. But this is a Sean McDermott defense. Make no mistake about it. So I don't know. I think it's interesting that these meetings are taking place down in Boca Raton. I do trust that Sean knows what Western New York winters are like, having grown up in Philly.
Now, this is something we've talked about really all week with these head coaches. Is he the type of guy that will come in and say, I want to run the defense? Or is he the type of guy that says, I just want to be the CEO and I have this guy who's going to run the defense for me?
I feel like that's a great question. I feel like he'll probably, you know, hire a defense coordinator. And I say that just because of the situation here in Charlotte, what he's been accustomed to the last 6 years with Ron Rivera, kind of, you know, those two sharing the same philosophy, but being allowed to call out the scheme and call game day calls and preparation on his own. So my hunch is that would be the way he would do it, and because it's been successful here in Charlotte with Ron Rivera. But that's a great question.
Hey, Joe, I kind of like something you've said, and that I'm beginning, you know, we're trying to form opinions on who this guy is,
mm-hmm.
as far as his character. And the fact that he, as you said, kind of worked his way up from the ground up at Philadelphia, we know that he was a walk-on at William & Mary. I mean, would you characterize him as like a kind of a gritty, overachieving type of guy? What can you tell us about his character and maybe his temperament?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, we hear the term grinder in this business a lot, and Sean McDermott is the ultimate grinder. Everybody works hard in this business, but you know he's certainly a guy that's not, you know, he's got the couch in his office, and he's not afraid to sleep on it some nights in the middle of the season in his preparation. I mentioned his wrestling background. I mean, he had an opportunity coming out of high school in Philly to you know go get a wrestling scholarship somewhere. And not just small, you know, schools. These were big wrestling type programs, and he knew that football was his thing. That was his passion. So he, as you said, he chose to walk on at William & Mary, and he's just you know turned himself incidentally into an all conference safety there. He really is. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to outwork Sean McDermott. Does it mean he's going to be a successful head coach? Yeah, you don't know. I mean, so many other things at play. There's a lot more to it. You mentioned kind of being the CEO. I mean, that's kind of, you know, tricky stuff. Some guys do that better than others. But if he becomes the Bills head coach or the Chargers or whomever and doesn't do well, it won't be for a lack of preparation and hard work.
And as you mentioned, he has had some other opportunities here with interviews with the Chargers and the 49ers. Any idea why he might choose the Bills? I mean, what about this situation might put the Bills at the top of the list?
Yeah, I don't know. It sounded like right from the get-go that he and the Pegulas hit things off last week, was kind of getting that sort of feedback from folks around the situation here so you know I don't know. Sometimes it's just how you relate to people, and the other thing is this opportunity. I mean, like I said, McDermott, he's 42 now. I mean, it's certainly not by any means old, but you got guys like McVay who look like they're going to get hired maybe at 30.
Yeah.
So I think Sean McDermott, you know, sometimes these windows close on good, solid coordinators. And this may be, you know, that he feels like this is a great opportunity and that the timing's right for him to get one of these. You know, there are only 32 of these jobs, and they're tough to get. They're tough to keep. But I know that this has long been a goal and a dream of Sean McDermott's.
Hey, Joe, thanks for joining us. We thank you for your insight. Maybe we'll get a chance to talk again sometime.
That sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Thank
on,
you.
Guys.
Joe Person covers the Carolina Panthers for the Charlotte Observer. He is their beat reporter. He joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. I am particularly, Donald, intrigued by the I didn't know that about how he started with the Eagles. And you put that on top of his walk-on experience at William & Mary. And, you know, who doesn't root for guys like that? I can see why he'd be a popular guy. I think players would respond to that, wouldn't
they? I mean, everybody responds to something. Just hearing that story, like, man, this guy really, like, comes to work with his boots, his hard hat, and his lunch pail, and he's going to work. The fact that he's from Philadelphia, that blue-collar type of attitude is what he has. The fact that he walked on, he could have taken wrestling scholarships. He decided he'd go somewhere else, walk on, and became and worked himself into an all-conference safety, playing alongside, you know, great or good players who are now great coaches in this league, like a Tom Call. I mean, not a Mike Tomlin. The fact that, you know, he actually was knocking on doors basically in Philadelphia and got that job, and like you said, man, those veterans looked at it like, man, when he became the defensive coordinator, like, hold up. Like, I remember this dude when he was
picking us up
at the airport as rookies, you know. Yeah. And when you see a guy like that grow into a position, yeah, people will respect that. The players will respect that because a lot of these players come from the same type of environment, you know, where they really had to, like, scratch and claw their ways into the NFL. And so they'll respond well to a guy like this.
Talking about Sean McDermott, reportedly getting a second interview for the Bills head coaching vacancy today with the ownership group in Boca Raton, Florida. No confirmation of that from the Bills. We don't really expect any confirmation until they're ready to make an announcement. But in the meantime, we can talk with you. The phone line's open, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Call here from Jonathan in Niagara Falls. Hello, Jonathan.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Good.
Okay, just a quick question about, I was really interested in the Frank Wright coming here for an interview, and I thought, you know, I'm from that era that, you know, watching him play, and I just think he has a great personality and character. I was hoping that he would got a chance for an interview.
Yeah, good question. And it's funny, Jonathan, when Joe Person, our guest a minute ago, mentioned how sometimes coordinators just sort of drop off the interview rotation. I thought about Frank Reich, who had interviewed for the Bills vacancy a couple of years ago and was considered a kind of a rising prospect. And now, from what we believe, there are no interviews for Frank Reich, not in Buffalo, not anywhere else. I don't know how that happens. I know his name was linked to Buffalo. This kind of shows you the superficial nature of the reporting that goes on when these vacancies occur. People just connect dots. Oh, Buffalo, Frank Reich, you know, and there really isn't any insight or anything behind it. It appears that that's the case. And look, the Bills did four interviews. They're on to a second interview with Sean McDermott. We don't know if there are second interviews coming up for anybody else, but reportedly on to a second interview with Sean McDermott. So it appears that Frank Reich is not in the plans here for whatever reason. Donald, anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to something we talked about earlier this week or last week. And when I asked you, like, if you interview a guy 2 years ago and you don't really you don't hire him, do you bring him back to interview him again? Do you expect that in 2 years he's going to impress you because he's learned a lot more now? I mean, how does that work? I just don't see that happening, him coming back to interview a second time with the team that didn't hire him the first time he interviewed.
Everybody loves Frank Reich, and for good reason. One of the great figures in franchise history, but for whatever reason now, and as Donald points out, second time he's interviewed with this management group, or second time he's been mentioned anyway as a candidate here, and he doesn't get the interview the second time. I don't know why that is. Here is Scott in Nashville. Go ahead, Scott. You're on the air.
Yeah, I had two questions. If I was the Bills brass, and then two, if I was McDermott. If I was McDermott, I'd want to know who's making the quarterback call. Is that the owner? Is that Whaley? Even if we don't go with Tyrod, the new quarterback who comes in, does McCoy get a say? Who's actually going to make that call? And then more importantly, find out who the leaky pipe is and get it shut off. All these reports that come out, this stuff doesn't happen to Denver, doesn't happen to Pittsburgh, it doesn't happen to the better teams, but yet every week it's the Bills reports come out. Who's talking and shut them up one way or the other? That'd be two things that way. And if the Bills front office, are you bringing players with you of quality on the defensive side? I guess it'd probably be more of a wink and a nod than actually being able to do it since free agency isn't open yet.
Right.
And then off your staff, are you bringing other coaches and then maybe this is going to be a guy's first time track at a defensive coordinator position. That would make me a little bit leery. I'd rather have a guy who's got some sort of track record on the defensive side rather than, you know, he's a good coach who deserves a shot at defensive coordinator. I feel like let him go get it somewhere else. We need somebody established.
Yeah, okay. I think we talked about that earlier. You know, for him, especially being a first-time head coach, a young guy in this league, you know, what's his staff going to be like? Is he going to go now and hire the best guys out there? And that's, for me, if I'm management, I want to know that. You know, who's on your staff? Why do you want to hire this guy? You know, what makes him more attractive than somebody else? I want to know that about everybody who you have in mind in bringing on this staff, because the staff is a very important part of winning teams. You know, you have to have the right staff to get it done. As the head coach, you need to manage everything, but you got to have the right staff, guys that are not just teaching plays, guys that are actually teaching and developing these players into great players in this league. And here in Buffalo, to be quite frank, you have to be able – it's not an easy sell for a free agent to come to Buffalo. It's really not, especially if you get the same type of contract from somewhere else. It's just – and that's speaking from a player's standpoint, talking to players throughout the league, it's not an easy sell for them to come to Buffalo. So you have to draft well. You might get a couple guys to come over, but you have to draft well and develop those players if you want to win. And so you need the right staff to do that. So for me, if I'm management, that's what I'm asking him.
In answer to your question about the, you know, who would he bring player-wise from Carolina, the list of unrestricted free agents coming up for Carolina, defensively, not impressive. Mario Addison, Wes Horton, Kawan Short, pretty good player. I don't know if there's anybody. He could be bringing someone with him. They're all scheduled to hit the free agency this year. So as far as McDermott's questions for Buffalo, who makes a quarterback call? Very good question. Mm-hmm. It would be right on top. Not only who makes it, but where are we going with it? And what's the plan for quarterback? Doug Whaley said 9 days ago that the next head coach would have a say in that, would have a voice in that. And if I were McDermott or any other candidate, I would want my voice to be heard. Who knows how he feels about Tyrod Taylor or anybody, Cardale Jones. The leaks. It's my belief that the leaks come from agents. You know, coaches have agents. And you know, the agents curry favor with the so-called insiders at ESPN, NFL Network, and vice versa in order to get their message out there, to get their guys out there. I believe that I'm certainly, you know, I haven't done a study on this. I don't know where all the leaks are coming from, but I believe the leaks are the result of agents. For instance, you know, the report over the weekend that I don't know if it was Schefter or somebody reported, you know, the Bills are open. What was it about control of the roster? Maybe open. Well, where do you think that comes from? That comes from an agent, certainly. Mm-hmm. Or there was another report about something about Anthony Lynn over the weekend.
And the ownership.
Apologizing or remorse for that comes from an agent, you know, maybe even Anthony Lynn's agent. I don't know. The agent says, you know, the reporter, Schefter, Rappaport, any of these guys calls the agent with whom he probably has a, you know, I'm on speed dial and says, hey, how did the interview go with Anthony Lynn? Oh, it went well. Hey, by the way, they told him they had remorse. So, oh, really? Well, that's an interesting tidbit. I'm going to throw that out there. I believe that's where the leaks come from,
Just think about it. If you're anybody in management here, ownership, Doug Whaley, Russ Brandon, whoever it is, why would you put that out there? Like, that doesn't make sense for you yourself to say, oh, yeah, we call up Adam Schefter and say, oh, yeah, we apologize to him for that. Like, why would we do that? That does not make us look good at all, you know? No. So that has to come from somebody on an agent or somebody in the other camp side, because it just doesn't make sense to come from here. And if they did that, they wouldn't tell anybody but the people that were in that room that happened, you know? So it's not like somebody in that room is going to leak that. If it came from in this building, it would have to be somebody else underneath upper management. And I just don't see them getting that message out to anybody else in that building or anybody else in this building or anybody else outside that room.
All these coaching candidates have agents, and agents talk to other agents, and agents talk to reporters. I mean, it's just the way it works. It's not ideal, but it's the way it works. Here is Gabriel calling from Arizona. Go ahead, Gabriel. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question for the coach would be, are you willing to sacrifice somewhat of your legacy of I'm a 3-4 guy or I'm a 4-3 guy and really just run what's best for the team? You know, in the sense of, like, using the players that you got. I mean, I like what Donnell said, and I've heard it so many times, like, you gotta find the smartest people to make, you know, your business the most successful, because you can't be, you're just not going to be everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like that, and I want to see a coach be more complete. I don't care if you're a defensive guy, make the offense, the defense, the special teams, just make it all work with what you got to the best of, you know, your players' abilities, get who you can get, but just make it work.
And not get, don't let me put words in your mouth there, but you don't want a coach who gets locked into one philosophy or another, Gabriel, right? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. I think so many times coaches have these legacies of he's just a defensive guy. You know what I mean? So he gets, it seems like he's just focused on that. I want him to be an all-around coach. I want to, you know, I mean, longtime Buffalo Bills fan. My grandma died, you know, a Bills fan. And I want to see them get back to where they can be. Their offense looks good. Work with what you got. If you have, you know, Tyrod Taylor, make the most out of what you have. And let's just, you know, start winning with what we have. I want the guys that are going to, I mean, of course we want superstars, but let's work with what we got and make the most out of their talents. And, you know what I mean? They're supposed to be professional athletes. Make the most of that.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. I always go back to a guy, and I know Buffalo fans hate to hear us talk about Bill Belichick, but you have to respect the greatness of his coaching. I think when you look at that defense does not always look the same every year. You know, like the year they had Revis, it was like straight man-to-man, more man-to-man than you've ever seen that defense do. And you know, he has certain players on the roster this year. Well, this is the defense we're going to have to run this year to fit the guys that we have on the roster, you know. And so it's like that, man. You have so many people that say, well, I'm a 4-3 type of guy, and so I need to get my guys in here to run that scheme. But if it takes us, you know, 3 years for you to get the right guys in here to run your scheme, now we're talking about a horrible defense for 3 years while you're trying to build your scheme. You have the best coaches can fit a system around the players that they have. You have to be able to adapt. Just like players have to be able to adapt to different things, coaches need to be able to adapt as well. And that's the guys that are the best coaches.
Going to take a break. Going to come back with more. Your thoughts on we haven't talked much about the divisional playoff games. We can do that coming up. But more talk on Sean McDermott, who gets a second interview reportedly with the Buffalo Bills for the head coaching vacancy here. We'll talk more about that when we return. And you're welcome to join us at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
A Buffalo Bills sports update brought to you by Yancey Fancy, New York's artisan cheese.
The update from One Bills Drive, where the Buffalo Bills now reportedly have a second interview going on today with Sean McDermott, Carolina Panthers defensive coordinator since 2011. Top 10 defense four of the last 5 years for Carolina. Also spent about a dozen years with the Philadelphia Eagles on Andy Reid's staff. Sean McDermott, age 42, reportedly in a second meeting with Bills ownership down in Boca Raton, Florida, after being interviewed last Wednesday. Several reports about this, including the fact that some speculate that former San Diego Chargers head coach Mike McCoy would be a candidate for offense coordinator here in Buffalo if McDermott gets the job. McCoy was the Broncos offensive coordinator for 4 years. The two sides talking in Boca Raton, reportedly no official confirmation of that from the Buffalo Bills organization. In Denver, Dolphins defensive coordinator Vance Joseph spent yesterday interviewing for the Broncos head coaching vacancy. Got good grades on Twitter from John Elway, the Denver Broncos president. Joseph reportedly a front runner for the job in Denver. A couple of days before the divisional playoff games, a scare for the Dallas Cowboys. Their rookie running back Ezekiel Elliott had a minor two-car accident on the way to the Cowboys facility this morning. No injuries reported. Both parties involved in the crash were able to drive away. A fender bender for Ezekiel Elliott, who tweeted out, "I'm good. I've been in bigger collisions." And the Buffalo Sabres practicing today. They play in Tampa tomorrow and in Carolina on Friday. Buffalo with a hard-won 4-1 victory over the Flyers last night at KeyBank Center. Sam Reinhart with a goal and 2 assists. Anders Nilsson with 39 saves and goal for the Sabres, who are on a pretty good streak right now. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones talking with you about the reports that Sean McDermott is getting a second interview for the head coaching vacancy here in Buffalo. We want to know from you, if you were McDermott, what questions would you ask the ownership and management? And if you were ownership and management, what would be at the top of your mind? Questions for Sean McDermott. Obviously, we've talked about it. The quarterback question is big. McDermott asking the owners that. The lines of authority, certainly you'd want to clear that up. I guess I'd want to know, I mean, these are nuts and bolts issues, but you'd want to know, you know, what do I have to work with in terms of hiring assistant coaches? What's the budget for that? Mm-hmm. The Pegulas have demonstrated under Rex Ryan that they're willing to open up the pocketbook, and obviously there's no cap when it comes to hiring assistant coaches.
Open up the pocketbook,
yeah,
maybe.
For coaches, Tom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for coaches. The Pegulas have demonstrated that. So I guess you'd want to know, well, what do I work with? How much can we pay these coordinators that I want to bring on? How much would it take to get Mike McCoy here? Mm-hmm. You know, I'd like to know that.
Hey, listen, when you're trying to rebuild, you have to give these coaches what they need to rebuild, you know, and that's players. First of all, that's staff, that's a quarterback, and the rest of the roster after that. You know, you have to give these guys what they need to rebuild. And, I'm not saying that this is a total rebuild, but we're talking about, number one, 24 free agents right now. So, technically, this is a rebuild, especially on the defensive side of the ball and offense at receiver. You're talking about you have to put a lot together on this roster. And, essentially, that can be looked at as a rebuild. Even if they were to go and make it to the playoffs next year, even at 7-9, for me, this is sort of a rebuild because you have so many free agents. He needs the resources they need to give him the resources that he needs to really get this thing done.
I want to see what they're doing at quarterback definitively, not speculation, before I officially classify it as a rebuild.
As a rebuild, yeah.
Yeah. If they're bringing back Tyrod Taylor, and I think that sort of indicates that it's, let's see what we can do here. Let's get a couple of more wins, squeeze a couple more wins out of this group. If they're not bringing back Tyrod Taylor and let's see who the answer is, then that's maybe sends a different message. But until that quarterback decision is made definitively, not speculation-wise, I don't know if I'd call it a rebuild. I don't know that it is. I don't know if it's necessary, to be honest with you. I mean, they were 7-9 last year. They weren't 2-14.
You're right. For me, I just look at so many one-year guys on the roster, and it's like, all right, how many of those guys are going to come back?
Yeah, well, not all of them, or you know, many of them even.
Right.
A lot of them were stopgap, you know, with all the injuries they had.
With all the injuries. But that means you need to get some depth, you know, and then you're going to have guys that probably won't come back that weren't one-year. I mean, they're obviously unrestricted now, but guys that you've drafted that might not end up coming back, you know. So you're talking about on the back end, we don't know what's going on with Aaron Williams. So on the back end of the defense, what's going on? That's a rebuild back there. You got to bring in some free agents. You got to draft guys. Receiver, you have four free agent wide receivers. What's going on there? Regardless, for me, if Tyrod Taylor is here or not, even if he puts together a roster that can make it into the playoffs the next year, I still think, and that's free agents, rather it's one-year free agents or guys on big deals, I still think that you need to draft well and you need to develop players so that you have a core of players like they have out in Seattle. You know, they have a core of guys that have been together for years, and those guys have all been drafted there, and they've grown into this league and grown into superstars together. And until you have that, even if you're making the playoffs, you're still building the roster. So it might not be a total rebuild, even if Tyrod is here, but you're trying to build that roster out because you have so many one-year guys, just stopgap type of guys on this roster.
Let's go to Manny in Hamburg, and maybe they can bring him up to the studio. Our computer is down here. Manny, your question about this coaching hire, what do you think? Hello, Manny in Hamburg. Are you there, Manny?
Okay.
Manny is not there. 803-0550, the number toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. John Murphy, Donald Jones, talking about the second interview for Sean McDermott with the Pegulas down in Boca Raton. If you were the Bills, what questions would you have for him if you were the Bills' brain trust? If you were the Bills, if you were Sean McDermott, what questions would you have for the Bills' brain trust? We've talked about quarterback. We talked about funding for the staff, a variety of those issues. And if you care to weigh in on that, you're welcome to. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back on the air, we believe. We thank you for your patience. We've had issues here at One Bills Drive today, most of them related to the power outages all over Western New York, including here in Orchard Park, the building in which we broadcast from without power up until about, mid-morning, late morning, right?
We had like that Super Bowl power outage here at One Bills Drive.
What? What do you mean?
The one that happened a couple years ago after Beyonce performed.
Oh, yeah, in the dome, yeah.
Yeah, when Beyonce shut it down.
We are back on the air. We apologize for the inconvenience, and you're welcome to join us on the phone lines, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550 or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Our Twitter poll has nothing to do with what we've discussed most of today. It deals with, instead, this weekend's playoff games, the division around playoff games. You can weigh in on that on the phones if you'd like. Our Twitter poll, which playoff game this weekend are you most looking forward to? 860 votes in so far. A pretty lopsided vote. Packers-Cowboys, the late game on Sunday, has everybody's attention. That's the Twitter selection of the game people are looking forward to. Second in this balloting, Steelers and Chiefs, the 1 o'clock game on Sunday, followed by the Seahawks and Falcons, the 4:30 game on Saturday, followed by the Texans and Patriots, the 8:15 game on Saturday night. I'm going Steelers-Chiefs, as I said, just because I'm an AFC guy. I feel like I know both those teams. I'm not a Cowboys fan. I'm going to watch probably three or four of these games this weekend, but that would be the one I'm looking forward to most.
For me, it's definitely the NFC matchups. Now, the AFC, the Pittsburgh-Kansas City game is going to be a good game. I think those two teams really match up well. But for me, I love to watch – you know, Aaron Rodgers going against – first of all, I love to see Dallas lose. I grew up in New York, but there's a lot of Cowboys fans. I can't stand them, so I love to see them lose. And then that Seattle and Atlanta game I think is just going to be a good game. But do you think that Packers and Cowboys game could have, like, some of the highest ratings in the history of this league?
Oh, yeah.
In the playoffs?
Yeah. Green Bay national team, Dallas the national team. There's history there, the famous Ice Bowl game up in and Lambeau, what, 50-some years ago now? Absolutely. That'll be the highest-rated game of the weekend. You can see that on our Twitter poll.
Do you remember the, like, a game, aside from Bills games, playoff game that you, like, really just wanted to see, like the most memorable playoff game? I can't wait to see this game.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, yeah, a lot of them. Yeah. Even last week, you know,
really?
Green Bay and the Giants last week?
Oh, yeah, Green Bay and the Giants, yeah. Yeah. Last week was like
well, they turned out – they didn't turn out well, but sure, there's a lot over the years. And Super Bowls where I really look forward to matchups. And as I said, I mean, you know, I don't know much about Seattle and Atlanta. I saw Seattle, obviously, and watched four or five of their games back in early December when the Bills played them. I haven't seen much of Atlanta at all. We know Houston. We know New England. We're all anticipating that's going to be a wipeout. I do enjoy watching Kansas City play this year, and I think, as I've said, Pittsburgh's on a serious roll. I think, to me, that's the most compelling game. I'm really looking forward to that game.
You said you think Pittsburgh is going to go all the way. Super Bowl contender.
Yeah.
I think it's – I mean, that game is going to be – it's going to be a good matchup. I think it's going to be a close game. I think Kansas City and Alex Smith can score on it. See, Pittsburgh's defense, I don't think, is that strong. Now, they're playing a lot better now. But Pittsburgh is able to score a lot of points, and they can score fast. And so they can jump out on that team. And even when I talked to Arthur Motes, he said that. We got to jump out on this team fast on the road in Kansas City in that stadium. In the playoffs, it gets – you know, in the regular season, it gets loud. But in the playoffs, it's going to be crazy out in Kansas City. So, you know, their goal, obviously, is to jump out and fast. And so you might see some big plays early to Antonio Brown just trying to jump out fast so that they're not, you know, playing from behind – than having to deal with that crowd noise on a regular basis.
Kansas City's got some strong pass rushers, obviously, and a good defensive plan. I think it's – yeah, I'm really looking forward to that game.
And you know, they definitely have some strong pass rushers, and they have – they're dealing with – or Ben Roethlisberger is dealing with a foot. So can he get out of the pocket? You know, like, can he be his normal self? We don't know how bad that foot is, you know. So when you have those pass rushers coming at you and you have a guy who's on a gimpy, a bad wheel – can he get out of there and make his normal plays outside the pocket like we're used to seeing? He might not be able to.
You are fond of identifying X-factor players.
That's right.
You got an X-factor player in that game?
In that game? Oh, it has to be Tariq Hill.
Okay. I thought so. I think so, too.
Yeah.
He could break it open just himself with what looks like a simple punt return, and all of a sudden you're like, whoa, what happened here? We're down now. Right?
He's like lightning fast. Yeah. He's good, man. He's really coming on. I think that guy is the X-factor in that game for Kansas City, and then for Pittsburgh, obviously, it's Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
But Tariq Hill is a guy that everybody needs to pay attention to because he can break the game open just like that.
Let's a couple of people want to talk about the Bills coaching moves, including Manny in Hamburg, who we tried to connect with a couple of minutes ago. Manny, are you there now?
Yes, I am.
Thanks for hanging in, Manny. We lost you earlier. Our fault.
I want to say that I think the two of you guys are the best sports show in Western New York.
Manny, that's awfully nice. Thank you.
Thank you.
Having said that, I'd like to talk about the fact that everybody seems to know it, or seems to think they know that Tyrod isn't a franchise quarterback. And I'd like to know, how do they know that? Because he's only been in a franchise, he's only been a quarterback for 2 years, a starting quarterback for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I think he's done remarkably well. And the things that he doesn't do well, are they not coachable? They'd be more to Donald. Isn't it coachable, the things that he doesn't do well? And my question is, would it be advisable, like, to get a really top-notch, a Frank Reich-type guy to be a quarterback coach? And he could also contribute in devising passing plays for the offense that are on a par with the running plays. I think our running plays are works of art. I think our passing plays are kind of boring. And I'll take that to Donald. He should know all about that. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Manny.
You know, I think it's something for, especially for quarterbacks, you know, we are all creatures of habit. And so, you know, I think you can get a great quarterback coach in here to really help to develop Tyrod Taylor's game. But at the end of the day, he's always going to revert back to what he knows. When you get into game time situations and the bodies are flying around, you're going to go back to what you know. And for him, for me, it's throwing it outside where it's a lot safer than throwing it inside, you know, when he can't see those different people moving in there. Do I think he can do it? I mean, I'm sure he probably can, but he hasn't shown that now in 2 years that, you know, I mean, he has shown it in flashes. He's shown it in flashes, but he hasn't shown consistently that he will make throws over the middle. He will make certain throws that quarterbacks, frankly, need to make in this league to win games. Sometimes as a quarterback, you have to make a throw and just, you know, it has to be like pinpoint one of those, like, man, did he just make that throw? You know, he hasn't been able to do that on a consistent basis. So I don't know. I don't know if a coach that can come in here, I don't know if there is a coach out there that can come in here and really change his whole game up, his whole passing game. Hopefully somebody
can. Are you
can.
Saying Tyrod's hit his ceiling? Can't get much better?
You know, it seems that way. Even only 2 years as a starter, you know, he can get a lot better. But, you know, you just haven't seen it on a consistent basis. I hope he can. I really do. I would love to see him get a lot better. I root for Tyrod Taylor. I really do. But, you know, how long does this team have?
Mm-hmm.
For him to still be the same way, you know, right. For him to revert back to his old ways. How long do you have to watch that? I mean, it's tough.
Yeah, it's a difficult question. I there's been marginal improvement, I guess, in Tyrod's game and his willingness to fit the ball into tight windows, but certainly not enough over a 2 year span.
Right.
I think my level of patience, I won't speak for you, is a little bit greater than maybe mm-hmm. management here as far as what they want to see from their quarterback. I think they'd like to get great play out of the quarterback, not just pretty good play. And they have gotten pretty good play out of Tyrod Taylor over a couple of years. Not what they, you know, need. Certainly the passing game is sorely lacking, but the question becomes, what's the alternative? Who do you got that's better?
Right.
Where are you going to go and get better this year? I don't know. I mean, I think that's a big question, probably one of the biggest questions on the table when the owners sit down with the next head coach. You know, what are we doing with a quarterback? How are we going to get better? Can we win with this guy? Can you know, imagine that question for Sean McDermott today. Can you, Sean McDermott, win and get us to the playoffs with Tyrod Taylor?
Mm-hmm.
How do you think he might answer that? I mean, he's, you know, I'm sure he's in preparation for this interview. I'm sure McDermott's looked at tape, discussed stuff with friends of his in the league,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure he has opinions. Can he make it work with Tyrod Taylor?
Yeah,
I don't know what those opinions are, but I'm sure he's given it a lot of thought.
He's probably talked to some quarterback gurus.
Yeah.
Like, tell me what you think about this kid. Tell me what you think. Can he improve, or is this his ceiling? If I was going to make a decision like this, you know, and take on this job, which, you know, everybody wants that opportunity to be a head coach, but you need it to be the right opportunity,
yeah.
You know? And so if he's going to be the quarterback, all right, I need to figure out what can I work with this kid? Does he have room to grow? And I need to talk to some quarterback gurus. Does this kid have room to grow? If they say, yeah, then, you know, I can work with this kid. If they say, no, this is this kid's ceiling, then, all right, we need to talk about what we need to do in the future at quarterback. You know, we might be able to work with this kid for the next year or two, but we need to really bring somebody in here that we're grooming to be the franchise quarterback in the future.
And I thought it was interesting in our guest earlier this hour, Joe Person when I asked him, you know, I mean, there's a feeling out there among some that, well, why would you take the Buffalo job? What could be attractive about that job? And he talked about issues like this, and, you know, yeah, there's a quarterback question. Certainly there is at least a storyline out there that there are authority questions as far as who's in charge. I don't believe they're as serious as has been speculated upon. But there's also a personal relationship that he would strike with the GM, with the owners, which is probably part and parcel of what's going on right now in these reported second interviews for Sean McDermott. We're going to talk more about that in the final hour of the show. Also going to talk about the future of the San Diego Chargers in particular and the Raiders. Both of these franchises may be moving sooner rather than later. The Raiders to Las Vegas, the Chargers to San Diego, a deadline coming up next Tuesday for San Diego to decide if they want to be tenants in the stadium under construction, the Rams Stadium in L.A. We're going to talk about that in the next hour, and we'll talk more about Sean McDermott. You're welcome to join us. The phone line's open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Coming to you live from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive, a second interview. That's a report for Sean McDermott, Carolina Panthers defensive coordinator, reportedly getting a second interview with the Bills for their head coaching vacancy. Multiple reports say that. McDermott interviewing for a second time. He's 42 years old. The meeting said to be taking place at Boca Raton, Florida, the home of the Pegulas. Discussions have continued by phone over the last week since McDermott first interviewed for the job, according to reports. And McDermott reportedly is not seeking control as much as he's looking for specifics about who's responsible for what and how it's all going to work together. McDermott reportedly has discussed the staff he would put together if he gets the Buffalo job. Former San Diego Chargers head coach Mike McCoy, reportedly a candidate for offensive coordinator. McCoy was the Broncos offensive coordinator from 2009 to 2012. McDermott spent the last six seasons as the defensive coordinator for the Carolina Panthers. Before that, he spent a dozen years with the Philadelphia Eagles. He's a native of the Philadelphia area, former walk-on who became all-conference safety at William & Mary. Around the National Football League, the Denver Broncos reportedly closing in on a deal with Vance Joseph to make him the new coach of the Broncos. Two sides working out financial terms, according to sources. Vance Joseph was the Dolphins defensive coordinator this past year. He is 44 years of age. He was scheduled to interview for the Chargers head coaching vacancy today, but stayed in Denver after interviewing with the Broncos yesterday. And the reports are that he is going to he's closing in on a deal with Denver to be the head coach there. Dallas Cowboys rookie running back Ezekiel Elliott was uninjured in a minor automobile collision on his way to work this morning. No parties, no injuries reported from neither party in the crash. Ezekiel Elliott tweeting out, "I'm good. I've been in bigger collisions." And the Buffalo Sabres got a 4-1 win over the Flyers at KeyBank Center last night. Sabres have won three of their last four. Sam Reinhart picked up a goal and two assists in the game. The Sabres play in Tampa tomorrow. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. John Murphy and Donald Jones coming to you live from One Bills Drive, talking a lot about the Bills coaching search. We want to take a break from that for a moment or two, though, and talk about some other news in the NFL. And it deals with the future, the long-term future of the San Diego Chargers, a charter member, the Chargers are anyway, of the Old American Football League, along with the Buffalo Bills. Their future in San Diego in doubt. And the deadline is now Tuesday for the Chargers to decide whether they want to move up to Los Angeles. Joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, reporter, producer for the mighty 1090 Sports Radio in San Diego, Marty Caswell. Marty, it's John Murphy and Donald Jones. Thank you very much for being with us here this afternoon. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you both very much for having me today. How's everything in Buffalo right now?
Everything's pretty good. A little sunny, a little chilly. We're good.
Just a little chilly, though.
Yeah.
Not like as bad as you guys have it.
Hey, watch it. It's sprinkling here in San Diego. So right now, you know, the streets are a complete disaster.
Hey, Marty, correct me if I'm wrong, but the deadline changed a couple of hours ago for this decision in San Diego. Is that right?
Yes. The deadline did change to Tuesday. I mean, it's not too surprising. The dates of January 15th was picked a long time ago, although some people thought the decision by the Chargers would be announced by now. But, of course, it is the NFL playoff this weekend, followed by the Martin Luther King holiday on Monday. And if you're the NFL, you don't want anything taking away from your playoffs, including announcement on San Diego or Los Angeles, either way. So it's not too surprising. There isn't a single person here that thinks it means, well, maybe the Chargers will go ahead and get something done with the city, because right now there is no movement. There's no talks. There is no plan. The Chargers didn't even go to New York today. They have no one presenting on their behalf because there's nothing to present. It comes down to Dean Spanos figuring out if he wants to go ahead and take a chance in San Diego, hoping sometimes eventually something can get done.
So his choice is, next Tuesday now the deadline, is what, hang in there for another couple of years in San Diego or go to Los Angeles and be a tenant in the Rams stadium under construction? Is that the choice he faces?
That's pretty much a choice as to whether or not, you know, whether or not Dean Spanos thinks that he wants to be a tenant of Stan Kroenke and not just be the number two team in the NFL in L.A. You're talking the number seven or eight popular team because you have the Dodgers, you have the Lakers, and you have the Clippers, and you have the Kings, and you have USC, you know, and you have UCLA, and then you have the Rams. People in L.A. are interested in the Chargers. There's no market there. Shoot, their games are getting bumped for Raiders games. The Raiders right now would be the most popular team in L.A. if they were to go ahead. If they had the option of L.A., they would be very popular. The problem in San Diego is there is no plan. There is no plan here, and it's hard to get anything done that requires public money and a vote. Measure C, which was the Chargers' plan for a downtown stadium that would have been built on tax money used by a hotel tax on tourists, that one failed. They only got 43% of the vote. So right now, Dean has to figure out, can he go ahead and put another plan together, get it on the 2018 ballot, and hope that he gets enough voter approval at 51% to make this thing happen?
Now, Marty, I know there's no plan in place for either going to L.A. or staying in San Diego. In your heart of hearts, what do you think will happen?
I think they're gonna stay. You know, I think the more people that are close to the situation, the people that know Dean Spanos know how much he wants to be in San Diego. He's lived here his whole life. His two sons, who partly run the team, John Spanos, the director of football ops, and A.G. Spanos, they were born in San Diego. They went to school in San Diego. Most people think that it would be very hard for him to leave. He's not in love with the Inglewood plan. He doesn't want to be a Kroenke tenant. And lately, over the past couple of weeks, the sentiment has turned. Most people thought maybe they were gone. Good is gone. Inglewood, here we come, January 15th. But lately, in the past couple of weeks, there seems to be a sentiment that Dean Spanos will go ahead and figure out a way to make it work in San Diego.
How is he going to get how's he going to change hearts and minds in San Diego? Right. I mean, 43% vote yes. So what does he think could happen over the next couple of years if he waits it out?
I'll tell you this. The number one thing they can do right now to help their cause would be winning. Yep. Because the Chargers have been dismal the past couple of years, 5-11, 4-12, of course, the year before. But honestly, this team, the people from Tom Telesco at the top, whoever they're, you know, the players on this team, Philip Rivers, Dean Spanos, John Spanos, really believe that they were hit by the injury bug so hard last year, and the pieces are in place with the right head coach to really be a force in the AFC West. So winning would solve a lot of things. And this is what gets me, though, about last year's 43%. People say, oh, you know, it shows San Diego doesn't want the Chargers. No, it showed they didn't want that plan. And people have to remember that in 2015, the Chargers, Dean Spanos spent the entire year working with Mark Davis on Carson. The people here said their goodbyes the final game against the Miami Dolphins. Everyone here thought they were gone. There were no efforts. There were no talks in San Diego. The entire 2015 season was about leaving to Los Angeles. And so you have a lot of people here that were spurned, people who didn't want to go to their games, watch their games, wanted to get rid of their apparel. A lot of burned bridges. The number one thing they can do is commit to San Diego and say, you know what, the threat of L.A. is off the table. But the biggest thing they could do would be to win some freaking football games and maybe win a division game or two.
Now, if let's just say they start to win and they change minds there, you're talking about staying in San Diego, building a new stadium in San Diego. Now, where the stadium currently is right now downtown, there's obviously no space downtown to build a new stadium.
Mission Valley. Right, it's in Mission Valley. It's in Mission Valley right now, and it's the second oldest stadium in football.
Mm-hmm. So, would you now be moving out into the mountains to try to build a stadium, or any talks for that?
Well, no. Their original plan was to try and move downtown. You know, the San Diego Padres have a beautiful, beautiful Petco Park right there downtown. But it seems to be that more people and the mayor put together a task force 2 years ago, and his vision was to be downtown. Now, if you were to go ahead and build in Mission Valley where the stadium is right now or somewhere adjacent to it, it would solve the Chargers' problem but also be a solution for San Diego State. for their football team. And one reason why, Donald, why there's been some optimism in the past couple of weeks is right before the Christmas holiday, the Chargers, led by Dean Phaneuf, met with the mayor of San Diego and also met with an official from San Diego State. So from that meeting, we think we've learned that San Diego State would be willing to go ahead and fundraise about $100 million that would go towards a joint youth stadium. So some of the optimism has come from the fact that you've gotten some powerful movers and shakers involved, including San Diego State, who would need somewhere to play.
We're with Marty Caswell, Chargers reporter on the Mighty 1090 Sports Radio in San Diego, talking about the future of the Chargers. Marty, as you told us a minute ago, the Chargers representatives did not go to New York for the Finance and Stadium Committee meetings today. The Raiders camp did. The Raiders may be ready to, you know, it looks like they're going to get approval to move to Las Vegas. What would that mean for the Chargers? And I wonder if, in fact, it means that maybe there'd be more league money freed up to help construction of a stadium in San Diego.
You know what? That's a great point by you. And if you're a Chargers fan, you're rooting wholeheartedly for Mark Davis and the Raiders to go ahead and get Las Vegas. Because the first thing it does is it takes the threat of Los Angeles off the table. So it takes pressure away from Dean Spanos of having to go ahead and exercise that option to make sure the Raiders don't get L.A. But there was also a thought that was, I think, that was put out there by Nathan Fenno of the L.A. Times. Because there is a shortage of money of what the Chargers are willing to offer and to what's on the table for construction in San Diego. There has been some thought that if the Raiders get Las Vegas, the $100 million that the NFL pledged to help their stadium cause in Oakland could go towards San Diego. So some of the funding gap could come from the Raiders going to Vegas and using that money along with $100 million that the NFL already gave the Chargers for their efforts here in San Diego.
I wonder also if NFL owners have the stomach to preside over essentially three franchise movements in a 2 or 3 year span. That might not go down very well.
That's exactly it, and that's one thing that I think Roger Goodell has mentioned, and there has been a concern, you know, over the past year over declining ratings throughout the NFL. And some of it, people thought maybe it's a presidential election, and, you know, just how crazy and surreal some of that was. But the last thing that you want to do if your ratings are falling is to have three angry fan bases that have been relocated. You know, with St. Louis last year, and, of course, it looks like in the possibility of San Diego and Oakland.
Right. Now, I'm sure you've had a chance to talk to some people, just normal residents throughout the city of San Diego. How will that hurt the economy there? How will it hurt the people that actually work at the stadium and rely on that for a job, at least during football season?
It's going to hurt people. I mean, there are people who are, you know, I was passing the security guard, this lovely lady who stands outside the Chargers locker room. She's had that job for 8 years. You have so many people there that depend on that job for their part-time jobs, whether it's going to be people in the A's parking lot, whether it's going to be concessionaires and security guards. So it would be a blow. And I'll tell you this, you know, the Chargers have been, despite their failures, despite the losing seasons, have been the number one sports team here in this market. And, you know, I took a cruise around that parking lot that last game, and it was as quiet a parking lot as I've seen in all my years living here, whether going to games as a kid, covering this team from a professional basis. You just see what 2 years of uncertainty with this Chargers, what's done in the community, you know, with people not going to games, like people like my brother who don't want to watch their games on TV or buy gears for their kids. So it hurts economically, but it also from a civic standpoint as well.
I wonder, Marty, if you could, and you kind of hinted at this a moment ago, on why the referendum failed last November and why even earlier attempts at getting public approval have failed. Is it the uncertainty? Is it the team's performance on the field? Is it the cost and maybe the tax implications of a new stadium? What are the objections raised by those who, you know, pretty consistently vote against a new stadium in San Diego?
Well, especially in California, it's always tough when people want to go ahead and use taxpayer money.
Yeah.
And there's also, you know, a lot of people think, listen, if Dean Spanos wants to go ahead, he's a millionaire. He's a millionaire several times over. Why can't he go ahead and put more money in? That's been a problem. But I really think the number one thing that's hurt them is the team's attempt to go to L.A. in 2015. The team's attempt to go ahead and, you know, have press conferences with Mark Davis, have town hall meetings in Carson, Los Angeles, which is about 2 hours north of here. That, to me, the fact that they tried to go to L.A. and they were voted down by their fellow NFL owners last year in Houston, people have not forgotten that. It takes a lot more than a five-month campaign to get your fan base back.
Yeah. You know, it, vaguely reminiscent, and I'm an old-timer here, but 40 years ago, the NBA Buffalo Braves you know, were entertaining moves and that got out there, and all of a sudden people stopped showing up for games. That happens, right? You erode the confidence that the fans have in whether you're even going to be around. All of a sudden you can't sell a ticket, basically.
Yeah, you try to leave your girlfriend. If you try to leave your girlfriend, you come crawling back. You better bend over backwards and ply her with gifts.
And she found out you were trying to leave? Oh, yeah.
Marty Caswell joins us, Chargers reporter, the Mighty 1090 Sports Radio. Is it your best guess, Marty, that this thing is going to be put on hold, maybe delayed for a year or more? Is that the way you think it's trending?
I do think so. I don't think people are expecting, you know, the sentiment here seems to be the longest. If they were going to go, they would have made the announcement right away when the season ended. Maybe when they fired Mike McCoy, they would also announce they're moving to Los Angeles. But the longer this thing drags out, the more people think there's going to be some hope. So, yes, you know, they can't do this thing with limbo as, hey, you know, maybe one more year and then we'll go. Because they saw the ratings and the ticket sales and the number of people, fans showing up. They saw what happened in San Diego. Okay, they were a lame duck in their own city. So there seems to be a bit of optimism that you get this thing, you figure out a plan, and you get it to a 2018 vote that hopefully only requires majority rather than two-thirds.
Now, when you look right now, and we're going through the same situation, going through a head coaching search, mm-hmm. you know, the Chargers are going through the same thing. Do you think a new coach can bring some hope to that city? And what else do they need to really get over the hump out there?
They just need to go ahead and win some games. And, yeah, you want to go ahead and start with a head coach, Mike McCoy. It's hard for me to really figure out whether or not Mike McCoy could have won more games if they hadn't been so hit by injuries. You know, mm-hmm. 2 years ago, they put a lot of money into their offensive line. They re-signed their left tackle, King Dunlap, free agency for Orlando Franklin. But that offensive line only started, I think, a total of two games together. I mean, that entire offensive line was a mess. You had injuries to Keenan Allen. And then this season was a different level. Your buddy Stevie Johnson was lost in training camp early on. You know, then it was Keenan Allen. They lost both starting inside linebackers, Manti Te'o. And then they lost, let's see, both starting corners, Brandon Flowers, Jason Verrett. This team was hit so hard that by the end of, by November, I didn't know who 70% of these players were. So many of these guys were off the street. Mm-hmm. You know, that you had guys starting who were the undrafted free agents, they're just plucked off the street. So the right head coach will start, but this team figuring it out and finding a way to stay healthy, that'll help a lot more too.
Hey, Marty, you are in a good position to answer this question. You mentioned Mike McCoy, and as you probably know, he's been linked to possibly joining a potential Sean McDermott staff here in Buffalo as offensive coordinator. What kind of offensive philosophy is he involved with, and how do you think that would work with him and Sean McDermott?
I think that would be a great fit. And as much as Mike McCoy was he became rather unpopular in the final year, the past couple of years, because of conservative play calling, questionable decisions with timeouts. He wouldn't have to worry about that too much as an offensive coordinator, which is what he does best. I know that when the Chargers were looking for a head coach here, that was the guy Philip Rivers wanted, just based on what he was able to go ahead and do in Denver with a guy like Tim Tebow and go to a playoff game. Philip Rivers had a lot of respect for Mike McCoy and his play calling as an offensive mind. But I think he might be better suited off this time as the coordinator rather than the head coach. So I think he would go over well there.
Now,
he does very well with quarterbacks.
I haven't really had the chance to study them that much, and I don't really get a chance to watch them that much on TV.
Okay.
What type of offense does he run out there? Is it a more throw first type of offense? Is it a run first offense? What's he running?
It looked early on like more of a running offense, but then you had so many injuries to your running backs this year, and so a lot of times he had to throw a lot more than he would like to, a lot more in Philip Rivers' plate, because early on you had an injury to Melvin Gordon, you lost Danny Woodhead, you lost Brandon Oliver, you lost Dexter McCluster, and then you lost Kenneth Farrow. So he didn't have too many options and consistency at running back, but when you have a quarterback like Philip Rivers, he put a lot more on his plate. Until those receivers went dropping like flies.
And last thing, Marty, it looks like about a half a dozen people have interviewed for the Chargers head coaching vacancy. Who are you going to wind up with out there, and is Anthony Lynn the guy, would you think?
I don't know if Anthony Lynn is going to be the guy. I do believe he is the only offensive-minded coach the Chargers had interviewed so far. They've interviewed Terrell Austin, Sean McDermott, Matt Patricia, Mike Smith, all defensive-minded coaches, one special teams guy in David Taub, who is very highly thought of. Other than that, though, every single name on this list that we know about so far has a defensive background, save for your guy Anthony Lynn, who we've heard a lot of good things about. But it sounds as though he might be staying in Buffalo, perhaps. Well,
we don't know. We're the last to know. We don't know. We don't know what's going on. Hey, Marty, thank you very much for giving us some insight. I hope that works out. I'm fond, like many people, you know, I go back to the old AFL days, and there's a certain cachet about the San Diego Chargers, even now, even after a couple of years. I hope they stay in San Diego and prosper out there.
I thank you for the kind words. I hope for the same thing, too. I'll ask you both this one question. When you think of San Diego, what do you think of? What comes to mind?
The city or the Chargers?
Either one. Just when you hear San Diego, what's the name association?
Sunshine. Beach.
Well, you're talking a couple guys in Buffalo.
Right.
I think a lot of people think Sunshine and Chargers, and I hope both of them come back to the city relatively soon.
Yeah, me too. Marty, thank you for this. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Marty Caswell covers the Chargers for the Mighty 1090 Sports Radio in San Diego. Sounds like, I don't know if they're going to get that done, but it sounds like a decision is not imminent anyway, yeah. Which, you know, I guess that's part of the process. Work through the process, see if you can extend it out and see if they can get a stadium built out there. I'd hate to see the Chargers move.
It's not easy for these teams to move. And you're talking about San Diego moving to L.A. and being like the seventh, eighth team in the market.
I mean, there
like,
are,
who wants to do that?
The Rams really didn't grab hold of the L.A. market in their first year there. I mean, or TV ratings, you know, I saw that the TV ratings were not good for the Rams games in Los Angeles. And really, you want to add an extra team to that mix?
Exactly.
I don't know about
that. And the people there probably don't want to add an extra team there either. You're talking about the traffic there would be ridiculous, you know. Yeah. Now, she was right, though. If they were to move Oakland, the Raiders back to L.A., ooh, man, that would be one of the top teams in the market just because that Raider mystique that they have. And
they're going to carry that mystique right to Las Vegas,
they
though.
Sure will.
And, you know, they don't want to be tenants. They want their own stadium. They don't want to pay rent to the Rams, nor do the Chargers. But I don't know. I can see this working out where I think we might know in the next couple of days that the Raiders are going to Vegas. And like Marty said, maybe you wait a little while to see what happens with the San Diego Chargers.
I'd like to see. Now, could they possibly be – I know he loves San Diego, and obviously – I would love San Diego, too, but could there be a situation where they just went somewhere else and not even in California?
Where?
I don't know.
Oklahoma
I'm just
City? I mean, where where would you go?
I'm just saying. Like, could you see that happening? And
no. I mean, in Vegas, you have a stadium plan that's already on the books, ready to go, and that's why I think the Raiders are likely to move there. In obviously, there's a stadium under construction in Los Angeles for the Rams, and – you know, they set up this deal a year ago, just about a year ago this week, where they set up the deal where the Rams made accommodations for either the Raiders or the Chargers to join them. That's the deadline we're talking about here, the deadline which was Sunday, now pushed back to Tuesday, a deadline to decide, you know, for San Diego whether to share the stadium in Inglewood with the Rams. And if the Raiders make their move to Vegas, then I don't know how much that deadline means. And I don't know the answer to this question, and I didn't ask Marty because she may not know. Is the Rams stadium plan, do they need another tenant there to make it work? I don't think so, but I don't know about that. You know, I don't know if the Rams have set it up financially so that they need either the Raiders or the Chargers to come in and share the stadium, or it doesn't work financially. I'd be surprised if that were the case, but I don't know that I don't think that's the case, but I don't know the answer to that question.
She did talk about San Diego State, you know, helping out to build the stadium, and maybe they can help out with that and be that second tenant. But, you know, how much money is San Diego State bringing into the stadium? And they're not like USC, you know, it's San Diego State. So how much money
it's
are
not
they
gonna
bringing?
Be like, it's not going to be an NFL caliber thing. Interesting, though. We'll keep an eye on that over the next few days, including the Raiders meeting today with the NFL finance and stadium committees in New York to talk about their plans. I believe most of the owners who've been heard on the topic have said, yeah, we're okay. If the Raiders want to move to Vegas, go ahead and do it. So I'm not saying it's a rubber stamp, but it looks like it's trending in that direction that the Raiders would wind up in Las Vegas. And when we were there in Oakland, you were there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you get the clear sense that it was all kind of winding down in Oakland? You
it
saw
did.
The.
It did.
You laughed at me about that stadium. You saw it with your own eyes.
Yeah.
It's terrible. It's not
terrible.
An NFL caliber stadium.
I was where was I? Oh, when I was in Dallas this past weekend, there was a couple of people there at the game from Oakland and from L.A., and they talked about both of those stadiums, both the Coliseums, and they're like, man, those stadiums are dumps. That Oakland Coliseum is it's tough And you can't even imagine that being an NFL stadium. Right. It's like you got like this team really plays here. Right. So
and you know what's just a half notch above it? San Diego Stadium.
Really? See, yeah, that I've never been there.
You never played there?
I was hurt when we played
out
there.
Yeah, again, not a good stadium. They got issues out there in California, which is why all this movement is taking place.
I think you were right, though, when you asked her about, you know, the fact that the league's ratings, they've been talking about the ratings dropping, and now you're talking about three teams moving to different cities in the span of 2 years. That's a lot to deal with when you're talking about dropping in ratings.
Especially in historical context, when the NFL went decades without franchise relocation, and mm-hmm. you have three in the space of a couple of years, that's a sign of instability, not a good look.
It is.
At very least. All right, we're going to get back to the coaching discussion. Sean McDermott gets his second interview, reportedly, with the Buffalo Bills today. We want to know your thoughts on that and any other issues relating to that. We can talk more about the weekend playoff games as well. Come back for more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Take it, Donald. I'm a little busy here. Go ahead. I'm doing something. I'm trying to go ahead.
Oh, welcome back to the John Murphy Show. I'm Donald Jones. This is, I guess, I'm the host right now, and John is the co-host.
Three more seconds.
Just for 3 more seconds, he's handling a little something. We've been going back and forth on playoffs. We've been going back and forth on Sean McDermott.
Okay, I'm ready
Mike
to reengage.
Boyd, you ready to reengage?
Yeah. Here's what I was doing. I was trying to get this set up. We want to re-engage with – oh, here's an interesting tweet. How far – from Michael Bonadera. How far back in the AFL do you go? Remember the Los Angeles Chargers of 1960? Sure, I do. Yeah, I know they started there and then went to San Diego. Are you questioning my AFL credentials? Please.
You can question mine.
That was real, the AFL. It was
I
good,
I know it was real.
Too.
It was just
That's
way...
why I have a fondness for Chargers and Chiefs and, you know, not the Boston Patriots, but some of those teams, you know, Denver Broncos. Mm-hmm. That was real. That meant something back then. All right, which playoff game this weekend are you most looking forward to viewing, to tuning in? That's our Twitter poll. You can weigh in on that. The phone line's open at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. About 900 votes cast so far. 59% of you say the late game Sunday, Packers and Cowboys. 24% say the early game Sunday, Steelers and Chiefs. 14% say Seahawks and Falcons, the early game, 4:30 game on Saturday. And just 3% say Texans and Patriots. And let us know what you think about that. We'll talk more about those games as the week moves along, obviously.
I mean, I would have to think that if Oakland was in this thing, if it was Oakland and the Patriots, that would be a lot higher. People would want to see that game. You know, if they had Derek Carr.
Yeah.
It's when we first started the show – it was at like 5%, and it's gone down to 3%.
Yeah.
So it's getting worse.
Every day, as the game approaches, people are less and less interested. The other issue we're talking about, Sean McDermott, and where the Bills coaching search is right now. As you know, it's been widely reported, the Bills now on their second interview with Sean McDermott, the interview reportedly taking place down in Boca Raton. And you think about McDermott, but you think about the four that the Bills have interviewed. Is it – they haven't hired him yet, and who knows if they will, but – it appears that the Bills are kind of locked in on the number one choice of their four interviews. Mm-hmm. Now, people can say, well, why didn't they interview Frank Reich? Why didn't they interview McDaniels, Matt Patricia, Vance Joseph, who reports are is going to wind up with a Denver job? But of the four interviews that the Bills conducted, they have their choice of all four of them right now. There's something to be said about that, I think, that McDermott is you know, if he, in fact, is their choice, it appears that the Bills got the guy that they were looking for, I think, right?
Yeah.
Among the four?
Among the four, yeah. I mean, nobody else has been hired that they interviewed. So, you know, they still have anybody that they can still bring in the rest of those guys in for a second interview. You know, they're still in that position. So, yeah, it appears that if they're going to hire him, that they've got the guy that they want. And that's a good thing. You need to get that guy. You need to get him early so that he can put his staff together.
The four interviews, and obviously it goes without saying that Doug Marrone was not a candidate here. Vance Joseph, not on the Bills' list of four interviews, and it appears that they are moving towards hiring him in Denver. Those are the Bills' four interviews. And, you know, McDermott, Lynn, Goodwin, Richard, it looks like they're getting their guy if they, in fact, lock up the deal, which mm-hmm. is reported in some quarters that it's you know, he's having a second interview today. We'll see how it plays out. I don't want to jump the gun here.
Yeah, I don't think we should jump the gun. I think like we talked about, I think, and we talked about this last week, do you pull a trigger on the guy that you think is your guy?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, they've now interviewed four people. So you've gone through a search of guys that you want to interview, and you've interviewed all of them. And so now it's time to pull the trigger on the guy that you want. You know, if you don't have anybody else lined up, pull the trigger on the guy that you want so that he can get the right staff around him so that you can get this thing turned around. It's important to have the right staff, as we talked about all day. And now you got to pull the trigger so that he can get his staff and you can move on to the questions at quarterback, which we all want to know about, and the rest of the lineup.
And McDermott, you know, had already interviewed with the San Francisco 49ers and the San Diego Chargers, both of whom I'm sure are eager to mm-hmm. get a head coach hired pretty shortly. McDermott had a round of interviews, a year ago when the – was it a year ago or 2 years ago when the Cleveland – interview with Cleveland and Tampa Bay. So it had to be last year. But Carolina was deep into the playoffs, Super Bowl team, and never got a chance to – you would think those teams never got a chance to follow up with him. So he's right. he's been doing the interviews, no questions about that. I'm just looking at the field of interviews. You know, Anthony Lynn, obviously, Bills, 49ers, Rams, Chargers.
Now, he's interviewed with them. Chargers, right? He went to two. Didn't he do a second interview in San Diego?
Yeah. Well, that's debatable. Some people say he was caught up by the time change and a late arrival there, so he stayed overnight. Was that two interviews or one? Or
true.
Who knows? Was there dinner involved? Who picked up the check? We don't know.
Did they make him pick it up?
Yeah.
He had to buy his own flight and everything out there.
Frank in Rochester. Go ahead, Frank. You're on the air.
Yeah, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just wondering what your take on or what your feeling is as far as Jacksonville hiring Marone and Coughlin. Obviously, them both being familiar with Western New York, and how you think that situation might develop. And also, I missed you were talking to somebody about Sean McDermott on the phone.
Yeah.
And I missed who it was, but whoever it was that you were talking to sure gave this guy a thumbs up. And it sounds like this guy kind of came up through the, you know, he kind of paid his dues. And I think that might be exactly what might be needed in Buffalo, because he's not gonna take any golf, I don't think, from anybody, even though he's a relatively young person. I think he's going to kind of run the ship the way he wants to run it. And if he was a wrestler and he got these wrestling scholarships and all that stuff, I think he's got to be a pretty tough nut. So,
yeah.
Anyway, I'll wait for your comments.
Thanks, Frank. Yeah, a couple of good issues there. Let's deal with McDermott first. And Joe Person is the guy we talked to an hour mm-hmm. ago, the writer from the Charlotte Observer, who's been around Sean McDermott for about a half dozen years now. And he's the one who talked about his – I mean, I'm kind of fascinated by some of the issues that you referenced, Frank, the fact that he walked down at William & Mary without a scholarship, with scholarship offers waiting for him in wrestling. But from all I can tell and what I've read, and I read a lot about him this morning, he knew he wanted to be a football coach. His dad was a football coach and decided that playing football, even if he had to walk on at William mm-hmm. & Mary, a really prestigious school – a great academic school, William & Mary, is fantastic.
As Kelso would point out.
But it is. It's bona fide. I mean, and a pretty good football school. They produce mm-hmm. some talent down there. The fact that he walked down there says something. The fact that he graduated from school and spent a year at William & Mary as like a graduate assistant and then walked up. He didn't walk on. He walked up to the Eagles, knocked on doors, got himself a job in the scouting department as a low-level scouting assistant.
Mm-hmm.
That says something to me, too. The guy who's determined to get what he wants. You know, there's going to be a lot of descriptions coming out about Sean McDermott, especially if he gets the Buffalo job, and most of them will be positive, I would think. That's the way these things go. But there are a couple of things in his resume that kind of jump out at me in terms of the type of guy he is and the type of leader he might become.
You know, we talked about this last week, and we talked about the pool of coaches, and there were no big names, right? And I like this, and I asked you, like, do they go off the wire? How come teams don't go off the wall and hire somebody that nobody's talking about? And so this morning you came in and you were like, if you didn't hear this guy's name before he was really being interviewed for the Bills, you probably didn't know who he was, you know? And I like that. And then when you start to hear this guy's story, the backstory is like, man, this guy might be the guy for the job, you know? And I don't know if he's going to be the guy for the job, but just when you hear that, he walked up and got himself a job. You know, he decided to not wrestle and play football because that's what he loved to do. I mean, all of that type of stuff, his mentality coming from Philly, coming from that blue-collar lunch, you know, I'm going to work every single day, hard work every single day. That's what you want. That's what you need. Forget the big splashy names. Yeah. The big splashy names was Rex Ryan.
Right.
And look where that got us. We're back in the same position.
And so, I
got
to say, I like those aspects of Sean McDermott's background resume more. So I like those answers. I like knowing that about him more than I like what kind of defense does he run. Is it 4-3? Mm-hmm. What's his defensive philosophy approach? We're hiring a head coach here. The Bills are hiring a head coach, not a new defensive coordinator with a new defensive system. And I think it's more revealing to talk about McDermott's background and his life story, his path to this spot, than it is to talk about – you know, how many tackles Luke Kuechly had last year.
Right.
I really do.
It does, because it doesn't matter, because now you got to come here. It doesn't matter the defense that he called, because, I mean, if you're coming here, you're talking about totally different players. Then you're talking about being the head coach now, which is totally different than you being the defensive coordinator. So we want to know about the person. You know, what do you like? What do you like as a person? Can you, you know, do you have what it takes to come to work every single day and build this thing, you know, turn this thing around? And it seems like he has that, you know. How many people are just going to walk up to the Eagle Stadium and knock on some doors to get a job? It doesn't work like that all the time.
And it's worth mentioning, too, and as we consider the four interviews the Bills have done, we don't, you know, the process is ongoing, no decision yet, no confirmation to the Bills that McDermott is even at this second interview that's widely reported. But if you look at the four interviews the Bills have done, it appears to me, Donald, that Doug Whaley, leading the search, has kind of staked out his own territory. He didn't, you know, get in line to talk to some of the guys that people considered some of the hot candidates. I mean, McDermott interviewed with the Bills, obviously, now second interview, reportedly. The Chargers and the 49ers. Chris Richard, whom they interviewed Sunday in Seattle, the only interview he had was with the Buffalo Bills. Harold Goodwin interviewed with the Bills and the Rams. He's the Arizona offensive coordinator. The Bills interviewed him last Saturday. Obviously, Anthony Lynn has had a round of interviews, the 49ers, Rams, and Chargers, along with the Bills. But if, you know, Doug Whaley has led this search, the search is ongoing, but it's pretty clear that he had a list in mind and went his own way. He didn't just follow conventional wisdom, you know. Right. I mean, think about when the vacancy came open. What names were people talking about? Josh McDaniels, obviously, Matt Patricia. Vance Joseph, Terrell Austin, you know, who interviewed with a couple of teams. Mm-hmm. He went his own way, which, you know, we'll find out whether it's the right way or not, but I like that fact, because they will be judged on wins and losses, as he should be. But I like the fact that Whaley didn't just say, you know, well, who are people to talk to? I want to talk to him also. Whaley had his own list, his follow-through was his own list, and now reportedly is on to the second interview with arguably, the guy that he really likes on his own four-man list. I kind of like that.
I love it. I mean, I love the fact that, you know, he's saying this is my search and I'm going to do it my way, and I don't care what anybody else has to say out there.
And people have said a lot in the last 10 days.
They have. Yeah. Ever since he walked on that stage and off that stage, people have said a lot. They've asked him a lot of questions, and then when he walked off, there was a lot being said nationally about him and the Bills organization because of what was said on the stage from him. And so, you know, he walked off that stage, and he said, these are the four guys that I'm targeting, and I'm going to end up – I mean, we haven't heard anybody else. There's not any rumors of anybody else being interviewed right now, and they bring in Sean McDermott reportedly for the second time. So he's saying, you know, I'm going to do it my way. These are the four guys I'm targeting. One of these guys is going to be the coach, whoever knocks, you know, blows our doors off, and maybe Sean McDermott is that guy. But I like the fact that Doug Whaley is not listening to what's
like
said
too.
Outside the building.
And he'll be judged on this hire, clearly.
Hey.
Have you ever actually seen a dumpster fire? I was just thinking. I don't think I have.
A dumpster fire?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a dumpster on fire.
I have.
Have you? Where? Because I wonder what that looks like. I haven't seen one here, by the way, but think about what was going on a week ago with the, you know, yeah, it was a bad look last Monday, but we were just saying, Whaley apparently didn't give a darn, you know, went out and said, here's my list, here's my four, I'm going to go talk to him, going to talk to a guy a second time. I don't know what a dumpster fire looks like. Is it bad? Tell me.
It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
I can imagine.
It depends on what's in there.
I can imagine it's probably unpleasant.
Yeah, it's unpleasant, you know, and depending on what's in there, it can smell pretty bad as well. But, you know, I think it was a dumpster fire like this last 10 days.
I disagree. How was it a dumpster fire?
I mean, I guess it appeared to be a dumpster fire. Let's say that. It appeared that this organization was just in a bad way, and nobody knows what's going on. Nobody knows their job or anything that the owners
and you,
are not.
I don't believe that.
I don't believe that either. Oh. We're in the building. I'm just saying that's what it appears to be. It appeared to be from the outside looking in for everybody else on the national scale, and even local reporters saying that. But he's saying that it's not. And this is the guys that we're targeting, like I said.
I don't know if Doug's even saying that. I think he's saying, I don't care what your perception is. I'm going to do my job, find a coach. And we'll see if he
locks it down. I mean, to be in his position, you have to be like that.
Yeah.
You have to be in the public's eye, you have to be like, I don't care what people think.
Yeah.
But in his position as the GM, he has to say that. I don't care. Like, these are the guys that I'm hiring. These are the guys that I'm drafting. And, you know, we have to go out here and win games. And I put my reputation on the line. I put my career on the line with the decisions that I make. And so because of that, I could care less what you think outside.
Here's a call from Rodney in beautiful Geneseo, New York. Go ahead, Rodney. You're on the air.
Where's that?
Yes, John and Donald, first-time caller, or lifetime Bills fan.
Donald wants to know where Geneseo is, Rodney. Tell him.
He doesn't know where Geneseo is?
I have no clue.
Really?
Beautiful.
South of Rochester?
Yep.
That's Geneseo, SUNY Geneseo College.
Yep. Definitely. On the edge of the Finger Lakes?
Yeah, pretty close. Yeah.
5-10 miles from Kinesis
Lake.
Now,
can you see that? Can you see that school from the throughway on the way to Rochester?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
We'll see.
No.
I have no clue. There
now,
you go.
Did I throw my opinion out?
No, we want to hear more about Jen. Of course, you can throw your opinion out, Rodney. Go ahead.
I got one thing. Both your corners got to go. We need
both
corners. If they want to change that defense and get it to where it should be, I just don't think Darby and Gilmore are your answer. I mean, watching these games, I mean, missing tackles, we need guys can come up. I mean, if you watched Alabama play the other night, I mean, their corners come up and they hit you, you know. And that, to me, both those guys, I wouldn't pay Gilmore. And if you want to use Darby for a second string or whatever, but you need tough, physical, tall forwards that can, you know, handle tough, tall receivers.
Okay, Rodney, I would look. Gilmore might self-eliminate based on what he would probably get in the free agent market, so right. I would say that. It might not even be an option. I wouldn't give up on Ronald Darby yet. I don't think he had a great year. I think he had some good moments and some bad moments, but I think there's a lot to work with there, and I hope they stick with him and work with him, get him better.
Yeah, I mean, they they definitely need to stick with him and develop him. I mean, he showed last year that he can play in this league. This year, you know, I guess he just went through a sophomore slump, whether it was technique that they were playing. I don't know what it – We've talked about technique for the last 4 months on here, and we've talked to many DBs about it and how they didn't like the technique that they were playing. So maybe if he can get back to the technique he played last year, he can be a lot better. So I would like to see him be developed. I think he can be a good corner in this league. Like you said, Stephon, you know, if he demands $13 to $15 million, I would like to see him stay here. And, you know, I know everybody else out there wants to see him leave, because of the missed tackles and early in the season, him not really seeming like he wanted to be here. I think that, you know, corners in this league get paid to cover, and his numbers don't lie. You know, the guy has 5 interceptions. He's second in the league in interceptions. I just don't think you can see that guy walk out the door and try to start over on the defensive backfield, and now you're playing with essentially rookies out there on the defensive backfield, especially not knowing what's going to happen with Aaron Williams. I mean, that's just tough, man. You're talking about a full rebuild on the back half of your defense. That's tough. That is tough.
Interesting tweet answer to my question. Kentavious tweets in, never seen a dumpster fire. I have seen a tire fire, though. I think those are worse. I've seen a tire fire. I think they are worse. They smell awful.
They smell awful. Now, a dumpster fire is contained, though, right, because it's in a dumpster.
Yeah. Apropos of nothing, really. I don't know. We're going to break. Come back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
It's presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Learned a little bit about Sean McDermott today, who reportedly is in for his second interview with the Buffalo Bills for their head coaching position. We talked with Joe Person, who covers the Carolina Panthers for the Charlotte Observer, and he had some thoughts on Sean McDermott and whether he is ready to be an NFL head coach.
There are some of us who've covered him for the last 6 years who kind of thought this day would come maybe even a little sooner. He was in the mix for other head coaching positions the last couple of years. Last year, yeah, he met with Tampa Bay and Cleveland before those teams hired Dirk Cutter and Hugh Jackson. And I think the timing hurt McDermott last year, too, with the Panthers being, you know, going all the way out to the Super Bowl. Everyone had made their hires long before the Panthers season wrapped up. So, unfortunately for Ron Rivera, they did not do nearly as well this year, but that helped, I think, Sean McDermott get in front of a lot of these owners.
Joe Person from the Charlotte Observer talking about Sean McDermott. That's what we spent the bulk of the day on. John Murphy and Donald Jones from One Bills Drive. We'll
did
see.
Did we learn what a dumpster fire was?
No, I'm still waiting for someone to show me a picture. I'm going to have to find a picture of a dumpster fire. Look, I know what people are referring to, but I've never actually seen one with my own eyes. No, I might have even seen a picture of a dumpster fire. You're telling me you've seen a dumpster fire up close and personal?
You'd be surprised.
Did you set this fire?
I didn't set the fire.
All right.
Would you be
because that would explain it.
No, I didn't.
How
set
else
it.
Would you just walking around and you see, oh, there's
you'd
a dumpster
be surprised
fire.
Let
me go over and take
see.
A closer look at that dumpster fire, see what it looks
you're
like.
You're right. Would you be surprised at things you see growing up in inner cities, man?
All right, we're back tomorrow at 12 noon, hopefully with more of this conversation. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned, locally operated since 1933. Like NOCO on Facebook for great deals, specials, and more. Our board op at Entercom is Derek Kramer. Assistant today, production-wise, from J.J. Torito, George Blast, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, James Donovan, producer Jay Harris. We'll see you tomorrow at noon with the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.